So, I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on one of Alienware's biggest gaming sales of the year? I mean, these are holiday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it before the holidays. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories like the Alienware 32 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So, I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before it's too late.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
It's time for DLC, your downloadable conversation for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Linda. Oh, Linda, bringing the show to you, DLC. It's special this week. Oh my gosh, we're live from E3. It is halfway through E3 already. We are at the end of Tuesday night, which is actually the actual day one. But day zero is a big day. We're going to talk all about all of the conferences that we can cram into this time period. I'm sitting in a hotel room in downtown Los Angeles. I had a whole big day, went to all the conferences yesterday. I have some awesome people with me. I have Christian Spicer, my co-host slash friend slash nemesis that you guys know well. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Mr. Cannata. Welcome to E3 2015. Hey, buddy, what's up?
Dude, that hype train is chewing along. I think this is one of the best E3s in recent memory, but we'll get all to that. I have to also introduce our buddy who's here to help us sort through all of this E3 madness, Zav D'Amatos. Welcome back, Zav.
I don't even know what year it is. They announced Shenmue. They announced Final Fantasy VII. What year is this E3 happening?
Time travel is hard, my friend.
It's
time travel
ridiculous.
Is hard. Okay, so I have been scatterbrained. I have been running from meeting to meeting all day. I don't have a clear plan for how we should do this. I don't think we should do it in chronological order because the first conference was Bethesda. I think maybe we should save the third party stuff for the end. We'll focus on the big three console guys, sort through all that stuff because there's so much to talk about. This isn't going to be your normal episode. We're going to talk all about E3. So I hope you guys are having as much fun as I am with this E3. It's been awesome. So let's just start. Let's start with the first of the console press conferences, which was Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And Zav, why don't we just start with you? We'll step through everything they announced, but just sort of overall, what was your take on Microsoft's E3 2015 presentation?
I thought it was a really good focus on some exclusive stuff that's coming to the Xbox. The backwards compatibility thing was huge. They took a nice little dig at Sony when they mentioned it, which is exactly what Sony did when they poked them about being able to play used games and sharing, you know, the copy that you own of your game
right.
on your PS4 back in the day. So that was nice. That was funny for them to be able to do that. Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of really neat stuff. I'm always hesitant now, though, whenever Microsoft gets us amped for something, because last year we were talking about, like, what? Phantom Dust? And and all these other things that they announced last year that weren't even at the show this year.
Oh, wow. So, I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hesitant to be like, yeah, those new things that they announced look awesome. Like, all right, well, where was Crackdown? Where was...
Well, they did say they were not going to bring Crackdown to the show. They announced that ahead of time, and they said it's going to be a Gamescom game. So I was very disappointed. I'm a huge Crackdown fan. But it's not like it was a bait and switch. They said, you know, loud and clear they weren't bringing that to the show. But, you know, I was disappointed it wasn't there.
There was some interesting things like that Elite Controller. I was like, all right, this is weird, but they're approaching a market that, you know, obviously MLG and esports is a huge market. So they're approaching that. And I thought it sounded like a neat idea. I was like, yeah, maybe I'll pick up one of those controllers. And then I found out how much it cost.
Yeah, $150.
150 bones for that thing.
Yeah.
That's a pretty penny.
I held one today, though. They are real nice. I have to say, they are really, really high quality. It comes in this cool case, and it's got the alternate parts in the case, so you can swap out that cool sort of polygonal D-pad thing that they showed. You can swap that out with a sort of more traditional D-pad that comes in the case with it. It feels hefty in your hand. Those pedal shifters underneath your index finger and your middle finger are really awesome and nice. The whole thing feels very high quality. You're paying for it. It's at a premium, but it does feel very nice.
Yeah, those controllers exist, outside of the third-party market has stuff like that, and you do pay a premium for things like that. It was interesting to see them try to get into that market. It was not something that I even thought was going to be on their radar. They did kind of tease a couple things earlier in the week that, you know, they announced that the $349 price on the Xbox One is just going to be its regular price now, rather than it being the special offer that's been going on for the last couple of months or year. And the terabyte console is the price of the original Xbox One. No Kinect exists. I feel like Microsoft could have announced that you can get a free Kinect at a fill up at a Shell station near you at this point. They're just giving them away. Like, who cares about Kinect anymore?
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really surprised at how interested and crazy people went about backwards compatibility. That was the thing that really shocked me.
I agree. Christian, this is kind of your topic, right? You love the services. You want to be playing all those old games. Are you excited that Microsoft is talking backwards compatibility for Xbox One?
I think the Xbox One would be in such a different place if this executive team was in charge when the Xbox One launched. Backwards compatibility, what it is it's trying to convince people that haven't jumped into the new current generation yet, all those 360 owners, to go to the Xbox One. You want to carry over your users. It makes so much sense. Doing it now, there still are a lot of people that haven't made the jump to the new generation, and I think this will convince them. One thing that really stinks about this announcement, though, is when you look at the games that are back compatible, it's very, very few games. They're going to be adding more, you know, as the weeks and years go on or whatever, but the chance of your game being added at this point, if you don't see it, it's kind of roulette. Like Zav was saying, the Kinect doesn't really have support anymore. Phantom Dust has been canceled. I think it's Wombat from, you know, a friend of the show and CAGcast and stuff talks about a game doesn't exist until you can buy it. And I think that goes a long way for this backwards compatibility announcement, where no game is backwards compatible on your Xbox One until you can actually play it. So while it's a cool bullet point, the 10 games currently available for backwards compatibility seems bleh.
They haven't actually rolled out the service yet. I mean, it supposedly is rolling out in the fall. And
I have actually played it myself.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm in the preview program. So if you go to your library, any digital game that you have that's backwards compatible just shows up in the games that you own. You can download it and play it right away. The two games that I happen to have are Toy Soldiers Cold War, which is an XBLA game, and Viva Pinata Trouble in Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And I just downloaded it, worked fine, not a problem. So, like, this is the thing, the details of this announcement, and I started to cut you off, Jeff, but the details of this announcement didn't come until later when they did their, like, Xbox, you know, post-show briefing, stage show.
Right.
Where they were talking about the reason why it's so limited is because they need to go and relicense every single one of those games.
Right.
So it will just work, they say. Like, games, the only games that won't work is because the technology is built such that the Xbox One basically has an Xbox 360 virtual console built into the system now with the software update.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's looking for USB devices. So they say things like Rock Band, Guitar Hero, anything that used USB peripherals will not be backwards compatible. Just can't do it because the system itself doesn't know where to look. It doesn't recognize those USB inputs because it doesn't know it's an Xbox One. It just thinks it's a virtual 360.
Right.
But Indrid in the chat brings up a good point. You know, he says, or she, they say, the best part of backwards compatibility is that Halo, Gears, and Forza aren't on the list. Why? And, great question. I don't want to play into conspiracy theories, but we have the Master Chief Collection. There's getting Gears 1 remastered. Are they going to make a Gears 2 remaster when I can just play Gears 2 on my Xbox One? Like this whole, again, I think what the current executive team is doing with the Xbox One is leaps and bounds better and more focused than how it launched. But I think it's hard to have this be your deciding factor to finally jump into the current generation. You know, like, Jeff, does this do anything for you? For me, the Elite controller does more. And I'm surprised. I had played with some of these third party versions of that controller. I'm surprised that all controllers aren't like this. Like, why, when games are, why don't we use all of our fingers all of the time? And why do we still play games where we need to take our hands off of an input device to push a different part of that input device? Like, we have five fingers, use them. I think that's a bigger deal than 10 backwards compatible games right now.
Well, I mean, you bring up a few different issues. I had an interview today with Aaron Greenberg, who's the head of games marketing at Microsoft, and I talked to him a lot about the backwards compatibility issue. They're saying over 100 games by fall and then updates every month. And the updates, he said, will be hundreds of games at a time. So obviously that's just words right now, but it seems like that's the plan as far as getting games into that channel. And the way it works is exactly the way you would want it to work. If you own the game, if your gamer score says you own it, if your gamer profile says you own it, you just can download it, like Zav was talking about. And for me, you know, I'm not as excited about a lot of the disced games, but there's so many Xbox Live Arcade games that I own that I would still want to play that really don't have anything to do with how powerful or not powerful your system is, that I just love the fact that I can just download those now. And yeah, that terabyte Xbox One is more and more attractive because you're going to fill that thing up pretty quick when you're downloading a lot of your backwards compatible games, because they're all going to have to be installed. That's how that works. But I think it's very cool. Backwards compatibility for me has never been a huge feature that I want, just because I'm sort of newest, latest, best guy. I want the next thing rather than the previous thing. But for those Xbox Live Arcade games that I own so many of, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But I feel like this is, people are like, oh, wow, it's something that they're, you know, bringing back to us and they appreciate it. But I mean, this is something that would have been nice at launch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. When we're waiting and it's like we're walking through the Sahara Desert looking for video games to play on our new consoles, it would have been nice to play some of these old 360 games. So it's a nice thing that they're throwing in there, and it gave them the opportunity to take a shot at Sony, I guess. Like, that's what these companies do at this point now. It's just scream about each other without referencing themselves or each other. So, I mean, like, that's totally fine. It was just like other stuff that happened at the conference I thought was more interesting, like the HoloLens preview or demo of Minecraft, I thought looked very interesting.
Oh,
I don't know that
yeah.
HoloLens is something that I would want to buy, but I didn't think I'd want to buy VR. And I really am interested in checking out like Valve VR or with HTC, and I have the Rift DK2. But like HoloLens, that demo looked pretty rad.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm surprised that there isn't more of that in these big showcases. And I've been talking to a lot of people on the show floor about that. And the consensus seems to be that nobody knows how to show it. Microsoft, I think, did a great job of showing it. They had that crazy camera that was built to show what you see from the HoloLens's perspective. But, you know, we only got barely a whisper of Project Morpheus before it was shuffled off. And yet Project Morpheus is a big presence at the Sony booth and is a big part of their future. You know, I was one who predicted that this show would be a lot about VR. We're not seeing that. And I think a lot of it has to do with you can't convey it to an audience at a press conference. You know, they had those wraparound screens at the Sony show, and they tried to show kind of what you would see in the wraparound screen. And that's just, it's clumsy. It doesn't, It doesn't convey how cool it feels. And I think that's going to be a real problem going forward. But Microsoft managed to make Minecraft in VR seem, or excuse me, AR seem so fresh and so interesting and so cool. I thought that was the biggest wow moment of their entire show that had a lot of really great games in it. Christian, did you know?
I want to dive into that. I think it was a super impressive stage demo, but what I think was super impressive was the stage demo and the camera they had that let all of us experience that moment, except that's not what HoloLens is. When I have that on, you can't come over to my house and see this awesome thing. From a gameplay perspective, what it's really adding to Minecraft in that demo, I could do on an iPad, or Microsoft would want me to say a Surface, where it's just a, you know, it's a pinch and zoom Google Earth view of the map. But now he has it splayed over his kitchen table, which you have to have a 10 foot by 10 foot, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think the presentation was mind blowing and awesome and cool. We got to experience that with him. From a gameplay perspective, to what it adds to gaming and new and cool and stuff, it hasn't brought anything new to the table that I can't already do. And it's underwhelming from that perspective for me. I didn't see it. Apparently, there's a Halo 5 demo that uses HoloLens in maybe an interesting way that I have not had a chance to see yet.
Yeah, I'm doing that tomorrow morning.
I love the idea of HoloLens being used for games like Halo, but that Minecraft demo was just kind of meh.
Really? Man, I disagree 100%. I thought that was magic. It felt like
magic. The presentation was magic. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. The actual implementation of gameplay, it's an iPad.
Well, no, when you can lean your face in and then see the interior.
Pinch to zoom and see the interior. Go ahead.
Okay, but I think that's different. I mean, for me, pinching to zoom and seeing the interior, or having it assemble itself in front of me and I can walk around it, and it feels like... See, Minecraft delivers this fantasy of what Lego could be. It's Lego if you had infinite Lego, right? If you had infinite Lego bricks in your house all the time, you could create what Minecraft offers. And then the second part of that fantasy is, well, then what if that stuff could come to life? What if the little piggies could actually behave like little piggies that I built out of Lego? That's what Minecraft is. And to be able to assemble that on my table and walk around it in three dimensions
without the tactile feeling, though? I mean, I tweeted, like, the HoloLens looked amazing when they showed it, but then again, and it has tons of potential, but then again, so did Kinect when they showed it, and it had tons of potential. I just don't know how fun it will be to, aside from leaning forward and how well it tracks you in this space, you're still kind of pinching to zoom and doing these weird hand gestures. You're not picking up the Lego and clicking them and doing things. Don't get me wrong. I want it. I want it to be made. I'm glad Microsoft is spending millions of dollars to make this thing, but I don't think it's going to be a hit.
Well, you have to imagine also, this is a difficult thing for them to try to demo. So they have to put it in terms that we can understand. So they're going to use a brand like Minecraft, and they can't get too complicated because they don't really have anything to sell yet. You can't go out and buy a HoloLens. That game's not available on that platform. They're just showing the potential of what exists based on something that we have a reference point for. So in that sense, I understand where they're coming from when it comes to trying to show off HoloLens. I love Minecraft. I've played Minecraft for years now, but I mean, it would be nice to see what else you can do with it rather than have Minecraft. But at the same time, we're sort of complaining about not something that isn't nowhere near complete. We're complaining about, like, just a, you know, the prospect of something. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that they have, I would hope that they have grander visions for what it's going to be. Because they're certainly not going to sell me on just that. Am I going to buy a $400 device just to, you know, basically pinch and zoom like you're saying? No. But there's potential there. And at least it shows this idea that Microsoft kind of brings up all the time. And they always lose their way. So, and it's like, it feels like it's Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, this time it's different. But with Microsoft and with Microsoft and PC games, it's a little bit like Sonic the Hedgehog and Sega. Oh. It's like, this time they say they're going to do it right. So let's see if they're going to do it right. But at least gaming is in the conversation when you know that the gaming team and HoloLens, you know, they're two vastly different pools of money at Microsoft, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also the only one in that conversation. No one else is doing AR like they are, so they kind of have to make it up as they go.
AR like they are. Love it.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're going to be supporting Oculus and they're going to be supporting Vive. So it's Microsoft's Xbox One is really where all that stuff's gonna be welcome, it sounds like. Let's step through all of the games as they announce them, and we'll just kind of try to hit as many of them as we possibly can. So the show started with the Halo 5 Guardians.
So good.
Yeah, it was a great way to kick off the show, I thought. It's a game that's coming out this year. It's a game that looks really great. Christian, what was your opinion?
I think it looked amazing. Warzone is incredible, and I think it looked incredible, I should say. I think it's the next awesome step in an evolution of Horde mode and firefight and this type of thing where it's just go crazy. Everybody, you have a team, but there's just, it's taking a Heroes of the Storm or MOBA approach with grunts or minions and throwing that into a first person shooters type approach where it becomes harder to feel safe. And I know Titanfall did this, you know, with their grunts that you had in your player versus player approach too. But I think something at the scope and size of Halo, assuming that 343 can continue to nail the AI that Halo is known for so well in its single player campaign, I think something like Warzone could be the thing that gives Halo legs instead of trying to compete with Call of Duty with its perk and level up and stuff like that. And I said this before, I think 343 did a great job with Halo 4 in terms of making Master Chief relevant again. And it looks like Halo 5 is going to have a really focused, interesting narrative. And kudos to them for pulling that off, because that was not an easy task when Bungie was like, peace, we did it, and then walked away. I mean, did you get hyped for Halo 5?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm you know, mostly interested in the campaign mode. That's what I love about Halo. And I love the fact that they're blowing out those teams and making that four-player co-op persistent and relevant and sort of in context of a narrative. So it's not like, hey, Master Chief, hey, other Master Chief, you know, there's actually four characters to play as. And I think that's really cool. It's really exciting. As I said, I'm getting hands on with it tomorrow morning. So I'll have more to talk about in our next episode of DLC, but I thought it looked fantastic. What about you, Zev?
I remember playing it when they did the multiplayer reveal a couple months ago, or I guess it was maybe like 6 or 7 months ago. And I thought it felt great. And the beta, I had fun playing the beta. The Warzone, obviously I'm at E3 this year, but I'm not here as press this year. So it's been weird, kind of talking to people about the things that they're showing and not having an appointment to go play it. The sense that I got from it, and maybe I'm totally wrong, is I thought it was going to be like two teams against each other and the pool of AI is trying to kill both teams. But the way that you guys are talking about it, it sounds like the AI pool is actually split as part of each
I don't
team.
Think it is. I think you're correct. Okay. The first time. I don't think the AI is split. I think it's kind of, it could mess you up at any point. But I think from the video, at least, it looked like it was kind of, and what I'm hoping for is that Halo AI, where if blue team is attacking and doing being the aggressor, the grunts or the enemies, the AI enemies would go to them because they're the one drawing fire, and you could kind of, you know, Chris Pratt motorcycle among the velociraptors. and then when you start firing, they'll turn. Again, that's just from watching the video, but man, I hope that's the case.
Yeah, and then the next thing that they talked about was a new game we hadn't heard about, a new IP. I love the fact that we're getting new IP. Actually, overall, this E3, far more surprises, far more new IP, far more unannounced things than I ever thought we would get, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. But it's a double-edged sword for me because the announcement of ReCore is exactly what I am annoyed with game announcements these days, which is it looks awesome, but I have no idea what it is, you know, because we get this fully CG trailer that looks really cool. It's from the creators of Metroid and Mega Man. I'm excited about that. The design of this robot and this female protagonist, and she's got this sort of this robot pet that she's hangs out with and it does things, but I have no idea if this game is a shooter, if this game's a puzzle game. I mean, she did some shooting in the trailer, but you know, these kinds of announcements where it's a fully CG trailer that doesn't actually show from the perspective of what you're doing in the game is a little frustrating because I want to be more excited about this. I just don't know what kind of game it is.
Yeah, there is no information to be gleaned from that that trailer other than the art style looks fun. It looks like a good mix of, you know, the big world scale from Metroid Prime, where that's where the Metroid team from Retro is kind of coming from. And, you know, Inafune obviously knows really tight core gameplay mechanics. So, I mean, there's a lot of character, and, you know, I like it. I felt like sidekick dog like creatures were in this year.
Yeah.
And that was certainly a thing that came in here. And it seemed like at least the key art for it implies that you're going to be building sort of an ally army, and maybe going to scavenge for those pieces and those creatures that you're going to find in the world, these robot creatures. So like there's very little actual information and just a lot of speculation, but the art style itself looks really neat. And we got another kick-ass female protagonist, which I thought was a really great thing this year.
Yeah, big trend. I think that they finally got the memo for diversity. I mean, we've got diversity as far as like white female. So we're at white female, which is actually a little progress. You know, it'd be great if we could move into a lot more diversity, but you know, baby steps. And it took too long, but it's happening, and I think that's pretty great.
I don't want to. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I don't want to bleed the conferences too much, but I think to your point, Jeff, about how you announce a game and show a game, ReCore was an awesome cinematic trailer, and it definitely set a tone for a game that I'm super excited about, right? Pedigree from awesome developers, a world that is oozing with style. I love games that have, you know, what a TV would call a show Bible behind it already, where I'm coming in on what feels like episode 40, where this world has been living and breathing. And I thought they did a really good job with that. Until Guerrilla showed Horizon, which I think is somewhat similar in terms of atmosphere. Again, gameplays could be totally different, and they presented this atmosphere in this world with this what seemed to be cinematic thing, and then bam, gameplay, and she takes down that dino robot, robo dino, I have it backwards, and I was like, holy crap, this in retrospect is what I wanted ReCore to be. Like, if when she plugs that thing into the robot in the ReCore trailer, if then it came alive and you saw some, just, you know, 20 seconds of gameplay, would have been much more satisfying. But to sit here and not still be excited for ReCore just because Horizon had a better debut, I don't think that's fair either.
That's why it was hard for me to get excited about some of the stuff Microsoft showed, because they did the exact same thing last year, where they showed a lot of cinematic trailers, and then you'd hear information about like the game was canceled, or the game they said, well, we're going to show it later. You know, it's hard for me to get excited for things that you're showing now this E3 when there was things I was excited about last E3 that you're not showing or have outright been canceled, or, you know, they say Phantom Dust may not be canceled. I don't know if they've confirmed 100% it is canceled. I know that team doesn't exist anymore, but well, it was difficult, but at least the pedigree, like you said,
about Ubisoft yet.
Oh yeah. Oh God. We're going to have fun there, but the pedigree at least involved. I was excited about what ReCore could be.
I think, you know, to your point, Zav, I think that, you know, Microsoft certainly was putting a lot of emphasis, I think more than Sony for sure, on stuff that was coming out this year, ReCore being the exception there, but, and, you know, other exceptions as well. But the next game they brought out, Fallout 4, surprise, it is coming out this year. We got that at the Bethesda conference, beforehand. A strange thing, I think, because for the first year ever, a third party conference preceded the big platform conferences. Usually you get the you know, the big third party games making an appearance at one of the platform holders convention or conference, and then later on during the third party's actual their own conference, you get to sort of deep dive into it. And this time it was flip flopped, right? We got the deep dive into Fallout 4 before we got the sort of short version. So it kind of felt a little redundant to have Fallout 4, but it really wasn't out of character for how those things work. It just, for the first time, Bethesda, you know, kind of beat them to the punch there. But what do you guys think about Fallout 4 coming out this year? What do you think about how it looks and all the craziness involved in what you can do in that world? It's a massive playground this time.
I mean, at the very least, I think me and you tweeted similar things, which was like, this is a weird truncated version of what he talked about yesterday.
Right.
But at the very least, there was new footage, so we got to see more of the game. And also there was the new announcement that Microsoft is working with them, to put PC mods on the Xbox One, which I thought was a huge announcement.
Yeah.
So it's mods first, though. They're coming to PC. I mean, coming to PS4 later. So it's not exclusive mods. It's first mods, which is still big, but not as big.
Yeah, I didn't get that language.
They did an interview. Howard. Did an interview later saying that they plan to come to PS4 too.
Well, I mean, that's great. Regardless of platform now, then that is something that you're going to get. Also, the Xbox One version comes with Fallout 3, which will be backwards compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a neat little pack in, I guess. But so it was a little weird, but I mean, I love Fallout. I'm super excited about that game. So it was nice to just see more of it.
Yeah.
And I was happy that we got to see at least some new footage.
Yeah, I think that game looks awesome. I can't wait to play it. I can't believe it's coming out the same day as Rise of the Tomb Raider. That's just it's just going to be Sophie's choice.
No, it's not. You know what you're doing.
I'm buying both. Was Sophie able to do that? I wasn't sure.
Can I borrow Tomb Raider?
No, Sophie pre-ordered her decisions.
Ah, smart Sophie. Smart. And then we got Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. Well, so,
real quick, on Fallout 4. Looked amazing. Looked incredible. Likely will be a lot of outlets. Game of show. Rumor. Just take it for what it's worth. But part of maybe the reason why it was on the Xbox stage is that co-development or whatever, that sponsorship money, and they really fought hard to have it be on their stage last year, and it didn't happen.
Interesting.
Birdie saying. So I think they knew that it was kind of underwhelming, but at the same time, they had this cool thing, so they're going to still put it out there, if that makes sense.
Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. I don't think we need to talk too much about that. It's more of that game. A lot of people like that game. Looks cool. I don't know if you guys want to comment on that. But that was followed by Forza Motorsport 6. I kind of mumbled that, but Forza 6, which looks real pretty. A car lowered from the ceiling for like 4 minutes or 4 seconds, more like.
What a waste of money.
How much did that cost to put the car in the ceiling? To put it down for no time at all?
I saw an interview later with Phil Spencer where he said someone was asking, like, oh, that was pretty cool. He's like, yeah, it was cool for you. I was the one who had to open the show standing underneath that thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty funny. Like, try to remember what you have to say when a giant car is hovering above your head.
I mean, I think Forza looks even prettier, if that's even possible. It's just staggering the amount of detail they're getting in those cars now. And I think it's going to please a lot of people. I haven't had a hands on with it yet, but, man, it looks great. Dark Souls 3, wetness
is the new thing for Forza. If people want to dive a little deeper into that, they're introducing wet and puddles and how that affects traction. Forza has always been known for its tire modeling. So it should be really interesting to see how they implement, like, you know, real time physics and driving on a wet track, which is some of the most rewarding driving I think you can do. But it will really change a line. So that's something, and it's very nerdy in car. And if Garnet was here, we could geek about it. But it really adds a whole new depth if they do it right to the track. So it's kind of like, it's almost like mirror mode for a track, if that makes sense. You think you know it, and then it becomes wet, and you do not know that track at all. It's fun.
Sounds cool. We got Dark Souls 3, just a sort of
hype
teaser. Not even
hype.
I thought that would mean that we'd get actual gameplay at the Sony conference, but it did not mean that. It did not mean that. But yeah, hype indeed. And then we got some Tom Clancy. Although the way the guy said it on stage, it sounded like he said Tom Fancy, which I wish it was. I wish it was Tom Fancy.
They own his name. They can do whatever they want now.
That's right. I think the most notable thing there, we got The Division. We got Rainbow Six. Again, they're leveraging this backward compatibility to say, hey, you're getting the other Rainbow Six games, Rainbow Six Vegas and Vegas 2, for free when you play Siege on Xbox One. I think it's a smart move to leverage that the way they are with Xbox One. It adds value, and people like getting free stuff, and it really doesn't hurt the publisher any.
How many people buy their game on PS4 because they get the Vita version?
Yeah.
Cross buy or something for like smaller indie games too. Obviously it's not the same kind of deal, but it's nice. Like, you get Fallout 4. Hey, why don't you play Fallout 3? If you have an extra 700 hours of your life to play both of these games, have fun.
Then we got Gigantic, which looks like a really interesting, different kind of game. It's in that sort of shooter MOBA space that's becoming more and more popular, sort of where Smite lives and
other games. Super Monday Night Combat and stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful art direction.
Yeah. Are you guys excited about this game?
Any game that comes in with the unique, you know, artistic vision, and I know this is kind of cel-shaded, Wind Waker-ish or whatever, but I will take this, and I think we'll get to Cuphead in a minute, but those types of games always excite me off the bat more than something like Rainbow Six Siege, which looked great too, right? I mean, I think they had a better showing of that game this year than they did where it was called the Kill Women Simulator. But yeah, for a debut of a game and it comes out and it just kind of seamlessly goes from what you maybe would think is a CG presentation into actual gameplay. I mean, it's what Nintendo does so well, right? With bright visual graphics that I think Gigantic could look amazing 20 years from now, whereas Rainbow Six Siege will look like Resident Evil 1, you know?
Yeah, it's got that Team Fortress 2 thing going for it, where Team Fortress 2 can never look old because it's just going to look like a Pixar movie.
Yeah.
And that's why people love it so much. And it's a good game, but you know.
Whatever.
Whatever.
I think it looks really cool. They showed this crazy fast montage of independent games, the ID at Xbox stuff, and like you mentioned, Cuphead is in there, which just I played that today, by the way. Cuphead. First of all, it's super hard.
It's punishing.
Very, very hard. But it is just how can you resist that? It's amazing that video games can look like that.
Well, and the art style lends to the difficulty because those 1930s cartoons were all about waves and like a jiggle or whatever. But when you're in a somewhat of a bullet hell platformer-esque thing and you have to learn what is somewhat of a randomized wave to the enemy's animations, it's a really, really smart animation style to put in that type of game. I'm continue to be blown away by that game.
Yeah. Other games there also look amazing. Beyond Eyes, I think, is a big standout for me. That watercolor look for Beyond Eyes, and it just really looks evocative and different. There's so many games this year at the show that are doing something different. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, military shooters and zombie games and alien destroying and, you know, Doom and all these things that are sort of retreading old things that I like, that I still like, but there's so much exciting, new, interesting things. Ashen, Tacoma, Beyond Eyes, all of those games that were shown in this segment just really have me excited for the level of creativity and art direction that's on display in some of these independent titles. Then they showed Ion, which we don't know anything about. and then Rise of the Tomb Raider. Holy smokes, was that trailer awesome. I cannot believe, I'm so excited we're getting this game this year. This might be the game I'm most excited to take home with me if I could take home one game. What did you
Fallout?
Guys think?
Fallout?
Well, Fallout.
Did you say Fallout or Tomb Raider?
Well, they're coming out on the same day, damn it.
This is, I hope this isn't so like an good Alan Wake situation though for them.
It's strange that
they're doing that. But you know, I'm super pumped for it. The thing that got me happened today, which is at the Square Enix conference, they said like we brought raiding back to Tomb Raider. Like there was like six tombs to raid in the last Tomb Raider game. So we need more tombs to raid, and that's what an emphasis is going to be here. It's sort of like she's figured out what she wants to do with her life, and it's raiding tombs. And now we get to do it. So that's why I'm excited about it, because you know, the first game I loved, like the reboot franchise, I absolutely adored it.
So
and those
good
tombs were fun, but there just weren't any of, it was like a handful, and I want a game filled with that. I'm
more
so
tombs
pumped for that.
More putting tombs in Tomb Raider. Yeah. What do you think, Christian?
I mean, this, I think, could be my game of the year, depending on how Batman plays out based on, I mean, Halo, there's going to be some good late hitters, but this game is my style of game. People that listen to this show know that I love Uncharted. I like the first Tomb Raider, and what they showed for this new Tomb Raider looks absolutely incredible. Much, much hype, but I do feel bad, man, because they didn't, you know, people say that bad, man. People thought that this game needed to partner with Microsoft because the first game didn't live up to expectations. And then when Fallout 4 came out and dropped that date on them, it was just like, sorry, you're not going to sell that well anymore. It really is unfortunate. People, if you if it ends up becoming a good game, go buy it.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I was Square Enix, I'd move it. Move it the week before. Like, yeah, do yourself
still so
a favor.
Close, though. That's still so close.
I mean, it's holiday, right? So they're just expecting people to buy for Christmas presents. That's why things come out in the holiday, is that it all just gets, you know, piled on top of one another underneath your tree, theoretically.
Well, Square Enix is also making bad decisions because they're bringing out like Just Cause 3 and Hitman on December 1st, basically. Yeah. I think they're competing with themselves on basically the same week. So they probably won't move it, but Square, move it. It's a bad idea.
I'm just glad Uncharted 4 and Rise of the Tomb Raider aren't coming out in the same period. I'm glad Uncharted got delayed for that reason. I'm glad those will be spaced out, because I think both of them are going to be excellent experiences. Mm. Big surprise in the next section of the conference with Rare. The new Rare game was debuted. It's called Sea of Thieves. I just was completely charmed by this. There really hasn't been an amazing pirate game, unless you count an Assassin's Creed pirate game, in a long, long time. And Sea of Thieves just looks so cool. I'm.
What is it though?
It's a pirate game where you're being a pirate, right, but you're being a pirate with your friends. You're being like co-pirates.
So is one guy manning the sail, and like that's what you're doing, and the other guy's doing the cannon? Like, I couldn't tell if one
guy
was actually steering.
Yeah, pull the rope.
Is that your job?
Keep pulling the rope.
I couldn't tell, but I like cutting the rope. I don't know if I like pulling the rope. I just, it's charming as all get out, but I wasn't sure what the game was. And also, no one could hit any, those are two big boats and cannonballs just not connecting. I wanted to see what happened when a ship got hit, and we never saw it.
Yeah.
It looks like a combination of the, obviously the Assassin's Creed boat stuff, but the ship combat, and sort of like the survival concept of Stranded Deep. It seems like it's a persistent world survival game, but it happens to be a pirate theme, and you can build a ship or get a ship and then compete with other people. It's sort of in the vein of like a Rust or Ark survival.
Yeah.
So that's what it looks like.
I hope that's what it is. I think that'd be awesome.
I think that's a really good theme. I mean, like, if Ubisoft's not going to make a pirate themed, just like a ship combat game specifically, that's not Assassin's Creed, someone's got to do it. And it looks pretty rad. Yeah. I'm glad that it has like a neat name. I was really afraid that they were going to do some Rare nonsense and name it like, you know, Booty Call or some nonsense like that. Sea of Thieves is cool by me. So yeah, that's the only thing. And also the Rare collection was a cool thing too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not really something I'm going to get, but yeah. Hey, cool. That many games. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Fable Legends is looking better and better and better. It's going to be free. It's going to be cross-platform. I played that game last year and I liked it. I think it's come a long way. It's going to have a big story element now that they weren't talking about so much previously. I think that game is going to be great. I'm really excited for Fable Legends.
I think the thing that the hardest thing it has going for it is the Fable name. And at some point, I think it's hurting it more than it's helping it, because people see it and they think that's not Fable. Even with the story element, what I've seen of the game, I think it looks really great. What they've said about the free-to-play model, I cannot support more. And I think I love the art direction they've chosen for the game. I think something like Evolve could have been a smarter free-to-play game. Titanfall practically is free now within the EA vault. But I think people are going to, what's going to hurt this game is the Fable name and free-to-play stigma on console still. I hope I'm wrong, but I think that's what's going to hold it back.
But I mean, if people are interested, all they have to do is download it and play it for free. So yeah, I think that's what's going to help. So there might be a stigma because free-to-play games aren't great, but like League of Legends is a free-to-play game and it doesn't seem to hurt that game. Like, you know, it's not a comparison, but I think the stigma of a free-to-play game is changing quite a bit. And if you want to change, if you want to make substantial changes to one of the franchises that your console is known for and make it like a MOBA style, you know, attack defense type of game, like this seems to be in terms of its combat, the only way you can do that and have people legitimately actually be interested and try it is just give it to them for free and see if they connect to it, and then just try to sell them on other stuff.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. I think that's a smart thing to do. And I think it looks good.
L guy in the chat just said, the fact that Fable Legends is free to play means I won't play it at all. And I unfortunately,
some
I think
people
a lot
are
of,
to think that.
I think a lot of people do think that. It's interesting. It's this weird stigma, but we don't have that problem with, you know, Dota or HOTS or some games. It's this weird world that we haven't quite figured out how to make sense of.
Wrapping up Microsoft was Gears of War 4. Gears of 4.
Gears of War Snore is more like it.
Boy, I didn't have that reaction. I think a lot of people felt like it was a bit of a letdown after a strong showing. I thought what they showed looked amazing.
Really? Okay, go explain.
Just graphically, mostly. And it's more Gears of War, and it looked incredibly immersive in that world. It's more Gears of War. But I think the game is, you know, still a ways out. We're probably going to see it at next year's E3 as their centerpiece, like Halo 5 was this year. So, you know, we'll see more gearing up. But the fact that that environment just seemed so pretty. That's what a Gears of War game is a very pretty shooter. And I'm ready for Gears of War. I think Gears of War is a great example of a series that took some time off and made me crave it again. You know, it went away so that I could miss it, which I think is great. I do miss it.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I agree. Go ahead, Dad.
I could not. Oh, sorry. I could not. From where I was, it was really hard for me to tell what was going on. It was really dark where I was at the time watching it. So it was hard for me to tell how it looked. In comparison, at least I could see the Gears of War Ultimate Edition, the first one, and say, like, okay, well, there's graphical enhancements. I like where it's going. It at least looks like they're going for more of a horror theme. I don't know where in the timeline it takes place. So if this is post everything, I don't know how that's going to work. So maybe it's going to be a very like dark, grim situation. And maybe it's going to be more survival oriented than action. But that's not what Gears of War is. So I don't know exactly.
It looked pretty action-y.
Yeah, I mean, it gets there eventually. That's for sure.
And there's a lot in Gears of War. There's a lot of walking around, not knowing if something's going to jump out at you. I mean, even in those first three games, but there's a fair amount of that.
That's not what Gears is, though. So I agree with everything you said on the back half, Jeff, that it went away long enough and I'm ready for Gears again. The first three Gears games were some of my favorite the years they came out. But Gears, to me, isn't defined by moments like when you're fighting the Krill in the dark and you need to get in the light. And, you know, there's that level, kind of like Ravenhold is a level in Half-Life 2, but that's not what defines Half-Life 2. What defines Gears to me is fluid cover to cover, you know, flanking, a hole popping up behind you. Just when you think you found this awesome place in this level, okay, I can hold, this is my choke point. I'm going to hold this. All of a sudden the level shifts on you and a huge worm comes out of the ground. Then you're rolling and you're moving. It's what Wolfenstein The Old Blood does really well too, where you feel you're safe in a corner and then the environment shifts on you and that kill box totally changes. And I get that the game is early, but what they showed, to me, it's not Gears, and I'm fine with franchises going different directions. I think sometimes it's necessary to keep them fresh and exciting, but watching a press Y to see, which happens in Gears, like, I didn't want to see that. I want to see pop and shoot and roll and dive and move and all of that awesome stuff, and I feel like what they showed of Gears 4 just didn't impress, especially the downside is that the first Gears games looked great, and the remaster looks incredible, so they show the remaster, and then they show 4. And I think 4 didn't pop as much because of how good the remaster looks.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right about that. So overall, I thought Microsoft had a very, very strong showing. I came in of there really jazzed about playing some really cool games. How did you guys feel? Do you think that they hit a solid base hit, double, triple, home run? What do you think?
I'm not going to put it into baseball parlance, but.
All right. Hockey, Zav. Give us a hockey.
It was hat trick all the way, guys. No, I mean, I thought it was a great show. I mean, they showed some stuff that was Xbox exclusive, which you need to do at a show. They showed some stuff that's going to be coming to multiple platforms. I feel like they emphasized what's going to be available, you know, for Windows 10 and for Xbox One this holiday season without delving too much into the future. But I mean, at the same time, it's like, a lot of what we saw that I'm excited about, you're saying you're excited about Halo, you're excited about Gears. Everything else that we're kind of excited about is stuff that we have no idea where it's going. So it's going to be something that I look at Gamescom now as a much more important show in this industry because we've had our E3 and now it's time to put up or shut up when it comes to some of this stuff. And Gamescom is going to be a huge show for Microsoft because they're going to have to go beyond what they did today or yesterday. You know, their conference was really solid, but now it's time to actually give us those games rather than just talk about them because they've talked a lot in the past.
What about you, Christian?
I promise to not be this positive about everything as the year continues. People say I'm too pessimistic and too snarky. This show proves otherwise. Man, it was a great press conference, right? I think if you're waiting to dive in on this current gen and you have the disposable income to do so, unless you swear by the Sony exclusives, Uncharted, God of War, you know, eventual Last of Us, those types of games, the Xbox One made a really compelling argument to be your system of choice for this year with Halo 5, Forza 6. They're going to have all the sports games. They have Fallout. Call of Duty is going to be there. They lost the DLC early exclusivity, but it's delivering a lot of great content in this calendar year at a price point that's pretty dang attractive this early into a generation, and they're going to continue to have support. It's not as if Microsoft is going to fold up and go away, and I think it's easy to pretend to be jaded by these AAA games because we've seen them before, but Tomb Raider looked incredible. Halo looked incredible. Forza is going to be another awesome racing game as long as they don't screw up the DLC charge for everything structure, which I think Turn 10 learned. I have faith that they did. And then the fact that they showed some really great ID at Xbox games, changed that name, Microsoft. I think you're going to be in a really good place if you're waiting to dive in and you decide to go Xbox One. Like, how could you be upset with what they showed? It was really good.
Solid show.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on and hit Sony, hit Nintendo, hit the third parties. This is so much fun, guys. I'm so glad you guys are hanging out and doing this with me. I just love E3, and I love this year in particular, but we do need to thank our sponsor before we do that. Lynda.com. Lynda, LYNDA.com/DLC is your place to go to learn things. Curious people, people who are interested in the world and take learning things as a daily activity, are my favorite people. That's the people I associate with. They're the people that listen to shows like this. And that's why Lynda comes to us to get their message out, because Lynda is the perfect place to go to learn things. They have over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, your technology, your creative skills. If you just want to learn something new, if you want to start a new endeavor, or if you just want to figure out how to use some of that software that you own, lynda.com/DLC is the place to be. They've got HTML5 game development courses. They've got character modeling. They've got 3DS Studio Max, 3DS Max, 3DS, the S stands for studio, guys. I don't need to say it. Anyway, they have Maya. They got all kinds of stuff, photography classes, anything you need to learn, any piece of software you need to learn, even sort of interpersonal skills, all kinds of great classes. Like I said, 3,000 on-demand classes with expert teachers who know what they're talking about, know how to convey what they need. And all of these classes are searchable. So you just go to what you need to know at the moment you need to know it. They've got manuscripts. They've got transcripts of all of the courses, so you can just go right to a keyword and then it'll sync right up to that point in the video so you can watch it. Man, it's useful. Man, it's interesting. And guess what, guys? We're going to give you a 10-day free trial so you can check out cool courses yourself with no obligation. 10 days of full reign on the site. Anything you want to learn, anything you want to look up, anything you want to check out, we'll do it. You can do it by going to lynda.com/DLC. You can sign up for your free trial. Then they know that you heard about it on our show, and that helps us out as well. So lynda.com/DLC. Give it a shot. Learn, maybe get into video game programming or learn something new. It's really, really cool. I use it myself. All right, dudes. So, Sony. Let's go right to Sony. Sony, I think they decided, they knew who they were talking to. They decided to preach to the choir. They knew their audience at E3. It's interesting. E3 used to be the place where big software companies and platform manufacturers came to speak to people who were potentially going to put their games in their stores. No more. No more. E3 is a different beast these days, folks. E3 is a television show that is beamed out to the world to be a big, gigantic ad for cool things. And what they like to do is manufacture the hype train, which we love so much. And I think Sony in the last couple of years has realized that if you give the dog some red meat, the dog will howl for you. And that's not to say that we need to be cynical about it. I think these announcements were exciting, but they certainly play to a very narrow audience. The first thing that they showed is the thing that we all, I think, got to the point where the boy had cried wolf, and we all had started to doubt whether it was going to happen or not. The Last Guardian was announced as being a real thing that's actually coming in 2016, after what, 7 years of radio silence. The Last Guardian. So, Zav, is it too little too late? Is The Last Guardian still exciting? Tell me what your feelings were about seeing The Last Guardian.
So they sort of talked about it without mentioning the name on the stage. And I was like, oh, it's The Last Guardian. I'm tired of this. And then they started playing it. And I just, every single, like, you know, Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, like, it hit me in every feel that I have. All my feels were targeted and missile locked. And I was like, yeah, this is gonna do it for me. I think it looks wonderful. It looks so charming, and it looks like it's gonna be just like harrowing, and that thing is gonna die, and I'm gonna cry for a month like straight when that griffin
that moment,
thing,
that moment where it's like it's just hanging there and it's like scraping and holding on, and the little guy like goes around and starts rolling the log so he can carry himself up, but he's just sitting there like scraping and trying not to fall. I was like, I can't even handle this right now.
You're opening with this, you monsters.
Yeah, monsters.
It looks really neat. The art style looks great. I mean, it needs to be stylized. It doesn't hold up. It doesn't look like that. It still looks kind of like, it looks rough around the edges, yeah, which is sort of the, you know, the style that sort of comes from those games. But I mean, but I mean, at the same time, they're like, yeah, it still exists 2016. You know what I mean? They weren't specific.
It's still not really close to being done.
I tweeted like The Last Guardian coming to PS4 in 2016, subject to change. Like, right, that is, I mean, that's kind of where we are at that point. But it's,
next,
you know,
E3,
at least they know.
No mention of it at all.
It'll be in there. It'll be on the shelf next to Phantom Dust one day, I'm sure.
Yeah. It does look wonderful. A new Ueda game, you know, sign me up, sight unseen. This particular game looks amazing. I just wish they had shown something that gave any indication what they've been doing for the last 7 years. Cause I think it's the same exact setting that they showed last time. I think like there's literally nothing different other than a date at the end from 7 years ago. So what they've been doing this whole time? That's my question. Christian, what was your take?
So, I mean, go back and listen to last week's episode and then see if you still laugh at me when I mentioned this game was going to be there. This game has had a troubled production, and it has the problem that many a sequel has. I know it's not a true sequel, of great pressure, creating great expectations, creating people buckling under those expectations as to what this game could be and taking it back to the drawing board. I've heard rumors that even the cat, bird, dog, dragon thing, they wanted to scrap that because it was too big and it created this weird world, or as a companion, creating level design that's fun and interesting for both of those characters doesn't work because you have this huge creature and this little boy, girl thing running around, and how do you have interesting level design? But once they showed it, if they're going to show this game, it needed to have that creature because that's what was so identifiable. That said, I think if they're able to pull it off like they did in the trailer of using these two vastly different sized and shaped characters in fun and interesting ways, and letting them get apart from each other, or maybe you run into a tomb and your cat, dog, bird thing is doing something else, and then they come together for these beautiful and magical moments, and of course that cat, bird, dragon thing dies at the end and you get real sad. This is going to be an incredible game. Obviously, it needed a 2016 date because holy crap, they're figuring it out. Two, I think it was the only game at Sony's press conference that was only shown on the relatively to other small screens, right? All the others were blown up huge. This was just on that one screen because there were some low-res textures going on. But at the same time, like you said, Jeff, talking about press conferences in terms of just like E3 hype train, choo-choo, getting my daughter revved up with her choo-chooing, this is how you do it, right? Like the cuss word eating grin when they kick things off and talking coyly about this game that no one thought was going to happen, and then showing it and playable. And it's just like, are you kidding me? It was incredible. The only thing that could be a better way to start a press conference is with puppet versions of your, I'm kidding.
Yeah. You know, the thing I tweeted right after they showed that was anything is possible. Shenmue 3, Half-Life 3, anything is possible. Little did I know, but we'll get to that. But it did seem like, oh my God, the thing we all wanted, maybe it's actually going to happen. Christian, you've already referenced the next game that they showed, and for my money, might be the game I'm most amped about having that I didn't know existed. This is called Horizon Zero Hour, and it's the new
Zero
game.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
And the zero is just Dawn. There because they liked the way the number looked for the logo.
Yes. It's the new game from Guerrilla Games. These are the guys that gave us Killzone back in the day. And it seems like Sony said to them, hey guys, instead of forcing you to make a Halo killer, you guys can just make what you want. And boy, that I think opened up a whole thing. The fiction around this universe is so compelling to me right away. Before we even get to the main character, before we even get to the cool robo dinos, as you mentioned, Christian, just the fiction of we are this new birthed civilization that came from the embers of a fallen modern world, modern Earth. And it's not, you know, it's not Last of Us post-apocalyptic. It's not post-apocalyptic in any sort of conventional sense. It's a lush, vibrant sort of neo-classical, neo-primitive version of Earth, but just in the ruins of modern Earth. I found that to be so interesting and so compelling in the art style and like waterfalls coming out of reclaimed modern structures, these skyscrapers that have waterfalls and trees entwined in them. I just thought that setting, I wanted to be in there. I wanted to be in that world. And then we see the gameplay. Zav, what was your take on Horizon Zero Dawn?
I didn't know what to expect from it. And it seemed like a weird mashup of, I was getting a real like Battlefield Earth vibe from the main character, like the dreadlocks and like what it, and they look like cave people. Cavemen and cave women. I was like, what am I even watching? And then I, you know, the dinosaurs were like, are those metal? Like, so, and it's funny when she's attacking these creatures, I'm like, I'm trying to think of the fiction in my head. It's like, okay, so are they going to eat the robots? Like, what are they salvaging them for something specific? So, but there's a moment in that demo where the giant rhinoceros looking dino is attacking her after she attacks a herd. And the main character slides under the rhino with the bow like trained on it. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I love it already. Like it just looks really fantastic. It's another big, inspiring, like open world, really interesting designs on the characters and on the enemies. I couldn't tell you what was up and what was down with the story, but it looks so original and colorful, which is something that I always love. Something that's really like bright and beautiful, has a really good feel. When Guerrilla was mentioned during the conference, I said, you know, listen, I know this is going to be beautiful, but will I like playing it? Because I have not liked a Guerrilla game since Killzone Liberation, which was like an isometric game on the PSP. Never liked any of the other Killzones. This game, though, looks rad. I'm really amped about it.
I this game is at the top of my list right now of just, I want more. I want to see more. I want to know more. When is this coming? This was a huge reveal from a company that has made excellent games. It just seems so different and unique and interesting. I am excited for it.
Do you know actually what it reminded me of? There was an old Lionhead game that was going to be released on the original Xbox ages ago that was canceled called BC. That Peter Molyneux was working on.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of BC.
Yeah.
Of like, you are trying to just survive. You and your people are trying to survive. But those were real animals, not robots. But that's the vibe I got from it. And I always want to play it. So I'm excited.
If I didn't know that it was Guerrilla Games, if they didn't put the logo up and they had shown the trailer first, I would have thought, oh my God, a new Ninja Theory game. It looks like Heavenly Sword or something. You know, it felt like a Ninja Theory game. So very exciting. There was a new trailer for Hitman. which looked very different and sort of contemporary. And it really kind of showed a milieu that video games don't really travel in. It almost looked like an ad for a new HBO series or something. Are you a Hitman fan, either of you guys?
Yeah, I'm a big Hitman fan. And also, it's interesting, Agent 47 looks a lot younger in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I don't know where in the story it goes. But yeah, I mean, they didn't show any gameplay, but the way that they're talking about the game, it sounds like a persistent world universe situation that mm-hmm. they're sort of rolling out the game over time. So I don't know exactly what the game's going to be, but I'm a fan of that franchise.
Right, yeah, Christian?
I think Hitman's always been one of the best franchises that can never quite get the jank out. I feel like this isn't the best analogy ever, but it's like Hitman is always better than Assassin's Creed 1, but never quite able to become Assassin's Creed 2, right? Where whatever you think of the Assassin's Creed franchise, it's like 1 showed so much promise, but was so boring and became pedestrian after a while. And then 2 realized all of this stuff in an amazing way. And, you know, whether around there is kind of the pinnacle of that franchise, I think most people would feel comfortable arguing. And Hitman is always, like I said, head and shoulders better than the first Assassin's Creed, in my opinion, and the gameplay they're trying to do and how it's plotted and paced and whatever, except for maybe the last Hitman wasn't that great. But I feel like there's always something that kind of keeps it from being the big mainstream success that a game about this very stylistic guy who's getting contract to kill people, but the person they're killing bad guys. He's kind of like a punisher. It's not as if you're out there killing, you know, indiscriminately. It's not Hateful or whatever that game is, where it's just like, kill. You know, it hasn't had the mainstream success because of either the punishing difficulty. If you're spotted, you have to reset the whole level, or this, that, and the other. So I really, really hope that this franchise can have a breakthrough moment. And if this game is just called Hitman and it's kind of like Tomb Raider and they kind of, you know, do a new 52 approach to whatever, they retcon everything and just here we go, I am A-okay with that. I don't have a ton of baggage behind Agent 47. I just want to do those really cool, stealthy gameplay that evolve with me as I plan a new strategy to take down even badder guys. But that trailer was wrong. Beautiful.
You're wrong. Absolution was a great game. That game was awesome.
Agreed.
Maybe you're just not, you're probably just not good at it. Or, you know,
be better at games,
bro.
I was not
better at games, bro.
Come on, bro. I think we lost Zav, Jeff. Let's just press on.
By the way, thanks to all the guys that are in, or guys and gals in the chat right now. I am reading all your contributions. It's really cool to have such a big, cool, vibrant audience hanging out with us for E3 night. The next game I want to talk about from the Sony press conference is the new Media Molecule game. It's called Dreams. Holy mackerel. I don't know what to make of this. I don't even know if you can call it a game. It feels to me like Media Molecule put all these resources and all this time and energy into creating Little Big Planet, which is this creation game, this stylized world, this magical place to be in and create things. That's also a platformer. And everybody went, your platformer kind of sucks. And at a certain point they went, why are we even messing around making a platform? Like, why are we even making a game? Let's just make the creation stuff and, you know, double down on our strength. And I think the result is this game, Dreams. It seems like it's not really a game so much as it is just a way to facilitate creativity and allow you to make things that are beautiful and provocative and interesting. And I'm all for that. I think this looks stunning and unique, and my God, what is it exactly? What do you think, Zev?
I don't know. I feel like it's masking the fact that it's a lot of tools and not a lot of content. Like,
yeah.
I appreciate what they're trying to do, and they say that you make your wildest dream come true. The game's called Dreams. Do whatever you want. But I know the first thing I'm going to try to do is make, you know, Super Mario Brothers 1-1, like level 1 world. You know, it's just like it. I appreciate that there's a lot of creativity that comes out of that team. Like that, you know, that series is a Little Big Planet series has always been something that I've really appreciated. But I mean, I want a game. I don't want tools. And I'm hoping that there's going to be more to it than make whatever you want. Because when you give someone a blank canvas and every paintbrush in the world and every color in the world and say, do whatever you want, it's daunting. Like, there needs to be guidance. There needs, and some people, this is how I feel. For some people, they want that blank canvas. So, but for me, it's just like, what is it that I'm looking at? What is it can I do? I need some guidance to show me why this is something that I want to, you know, delve into.
I don't know. I feel like it's so nice that someone is putting the resources to create something as unique and enigmatic as this. Christian, what side do you fall on?
More on Zavs. I love Media Molecule. I mean, Tearaway was one of my favorite experiences over the past few years. I feel like Minecraft has shown that a blank canvas works, but I also feel like it shows that a blank canvas in a familiar play area works, right? Where everyone has played Lego and there is some familiarity with what you're doing. And also, there was a game in there of Surviving the Night, and it launched early access and it did all of this stuff really, really well to build this awesome community. I feel like a game like Dream, from what they've shown, if it comes out as shown, unfortunately will get overlooked by all, except for the very few dedicated hardcore, tinkerers and explorers of console gamers. And you'll see some really cool YouTube videos for it. But I mean, I'll put $5 down right now, Jeff, that you will not play more than 4 hours of this experience if you even buy it. I will also wager that you will not spend your own money on this game when it comes out. It's a beautiful, awesome thing, but I think Media Molecule needs, I don't quite know what the right analogy is, but they need like a showrunner, you know, in the TV world that knows what they're doing, that's had tons of great hits behind them, to come and grab the reins of these you know, mice running every which way, and to make something beautiful and awesome, because they just haven't been corralled properly yet.
They are the Terrence Malick of video games. Like, they need an editor. Listen, people in the chat are saying that I'm wrong and that this is not a thing for me. There's not a lot of this specifically. And I agree that they are the sole company that has this sort of creative vision. But if you look at something like Minecraft, that is essentially a blank canvas, which is two words I cannot say. It at least gives you tools and guidance, and then you can be extraordinarily creative with all of those components. And, you know, it's just a quick teaser. They said that it's a thing that they're working on, and it will hopefully evolve into something. But just as it stands right now, what they've shown me like, oh, you can just start shaping things and make a world and make a neat little trailer. I mean, how long did it take to make that? You know, and what is the end result? Is the destination the result? Is the journey? Am I supposed to get the emotion out of it to build things? There's a lot of promise, but I just don't know what it is they're trying to promise.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you may be right, Christian. I may not be the guy, but I love the fact that this exists. I want to be the guy that watches what other people make, and I want to be, you know, there are a lot of people that created incredibly intricate stories in The Sims, and there's people that create incredibly detailed levels in Disney Infinity, and there's people that made Little Big Planet levels, and there's people that are going to spend a lot of time in Mario Maker. I'm not that guy in any of those cases. I love seeing those things. I love the YouTube videos that result from somebody creating a computer in Little Big Planet and all that stuff. I think that the things that will result from this game are going to be more beautiful and more evocative and more interesting than any of those things, because I think the palette is even more broad and the possibilities are even more outrageous. So, you know, yes, everybody in the chat room is right. There's going to be penises galore, but I think there will also be people really making creative, interesting things.
I agree with that. I never want to poo-poo on someone's creation and beauty and art. I mean, my father made his living as an impressionistic painter. I have a lot of artists in my greater family. I get it. I love art. I love exploration. Me as a gamer, I would much rather have Journey or Flower than Dream. And, you know, I want to play someone else's beautiful experience that then I get to wrap over mine instead of being told, go mold this virtual clay. I'm super glad that this thing exists. What I'm scared of is that at some point Media Molecule goes away because they're in the red with every game they make.
Another game that is right at the top of my list of most wanted, of thing that feels very special and made just for me, is a game that they showed at the Sony press conference next up, and that is Firewatch. This game just seems so cool and so fun and so funny, and It's the game that I've wanted. Like, just put me in this interesting environment and create an interesting character around it. And you know, it doesn't necessarily have to have supernatural stuff or crazy things going on, although that may happen at the end of this game. I don't know. But it certainly looks like it's just this forest ranger, and who's voiced, I think, wonderfully by Rich Sommer. And he gets, you know, he has this relationship with this female forest ranger over the walkie-talkie, and he's kind of investigating his area, and there's going to be some mystery of what happens. It just looks like a game I'm going to absolutely love. I cannot be more excited for Firewatch. What do you guys think about it?
It reminded me of the Long Dark Hildebrand's game.
Yeah.
I mean, the art style in the Long Dark is slightly different, but it's sort of like the desert and setting of the Long Dark. So I think it's sort of a similar type of game from Campo Santo, which is their first game, which is super exciting that they're getting so much support and the game looks as great as it does. And I loved the voice work in the trailer. And it has a lot of mystery around it, which I think is really neat. Every time they've shown it, they've always had that sort of like sting at the end that something mm-hmm. is not exactly what it seems.
Yeah.
Which is neat. And maybe it's just me putting my own like thought on it, but it seems like a survival game like The Long Dark. So maybe that's why I accept it more and not knowing as much about it that I do some of the other games that I don't know enough about. But it does have like a really fun look to it. But it seems like there's this sense of urgency and like a thriller in there that I'm really interested in.
Yeah, I think this game goes Heart of Darkness on you at some point where it's this bright, beautiful world. Like I want, maybe they have that little bit of ominous, like you don't know what's happening. Why aren't you in the tower at the end of the trailer moment? But I love the idea of a Heart of Darkness type game existing in a beautiful world. Like imagining actually walking around Yosemite in the perfect springtime day as everything falls apart and you realize you've been lied to, your sanity starts to slip. All of a sudden, something that you've been able to do every day of your life by climbing whatever this rock is now different because you're exhausted and you're trying to press harder than you can. All this building with a narrator that you don't know if you can trust, and what do you do? And I know I'm putting my hopes, dreams, wishes, and desires on this game, but that's what I got out of the trailer, and I would love to play that kind of game.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be that or not. I'm just so encouraged by, you know, I love shooters. I love violence in games. I have a great time killing stuff in video games. I don't necessarily want to get rid of that, but I love how many games in the Sony press conference didn't show any killing at all. I just think that is the coolest thing. I mean, you start with Last Guardian, no killing. Dreams, no killing. Firewatch, no killing. It's the fact that we have these kinds of experiences now, even in the Xbox conference, there's these games. There's a game called The Fire and the Flood that looks really interesting, that is just about being in a place, and there's no supernatural stuff going. It's this girl trying to, you know, get through this flood with her dog. Just the fact that there's a variety of these kinds of experiences and it's not all the same thing anymore is it feels so vibrant and interesting, this industry right now. And I love it. So Firewatch is for me a great example of that. And then of course they had to return to the theme of the Sony press conference, which is fan service, baby. Holy moly, Final Fantasy VII Remake is actually happening. This is something people have been clamoring for what, a decade, guys? A decade people have wanted that? More? It's actually happening. It's certainly not happening anytime soon. but
by the time they release this game, it's going to be 13-4 or something.
Yeah, right.
Because they keep... No, I was shocked that it happened. It was always been the thing that people have been joking about since they showed that tech demo on the PS3 like ages ago. And Square Enix was like, no, we're not making that. We're just wanting to show you the power of the system. But Square Enix probably sat down in an office one day and realized, like, you know what would make money?
But how could they not know that before now? They know what people have been clamoring for. I don't know. It's so crazy to me that this is actually a thing now. Yeah. I don't know if
I mean, personally, I would prefer Final Fantasy VIII Remake, but I mean, Final Fantasy VII brought a lot of people into that franchise. Yeah. And that is one of people's favorite games in that series. So, I mean, I'm going to play the hell out of that. And it was another one of those games that was at a lot of the main conferences or Sony and Microsoft that was like first on, or games that are coming to other platforms that are timed exclusive. Like, we don't know exactly the platforms Final Fantasy VII is going to end up on, but it's probably going to be PC and maybe Xbox One. Because, you know, Square Enix does put games on both of those platforms, but it's first on PS4, sort of the same like Rise of the Tomb Raider situation that Microsoft has with Square Enix over there. But you know what was hilarious? Some people on Twitter were complaining about, like, man, I hate CG trailers. They don't show anything. And then they showed that trailer and everyone's like, oh, now it's fine. You see someone's back for 5 seconds and it's totally cool. It's going to be the greatest thing in the world. Like,
That sword.
Final Fantasy, though, also, right? Final Fantasy trailers have always been these awesome. Seven originally was this awesome CG trailer. That's like blaming Diablo 4 for launching with an awesome CG trailer. It's like, no. I would almost think it'd be weird if Diablo 4, if or when it comes out, they just show like click, 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 click gameplay. It's like, I want to
show the mouse, not even the game.
I want to see awesome. This was huge. This was a huge get, a huge reveal. If it doesn't come out 2018, as long as real progress gets made on it and Square Enix doesn't go out of business, I mean, this is massive. And I think, Zav, the only reason, I think 8 is a very good game, but I think the thing that 7 suffers from is, I would call it the Matrix effect, where the first Matrix is an incredible movie, but you saw it and you loved it, and then you came to school the next day and the captain of the football team was talking about loving it, and then everyone was talking, and then your mom loved it, and you were like, you know what? The Matrix sucked because everyone loved it. Final Fantasy VII is great. Just pull back the fact that it's this cultural icon that gave this franchise 10 years of crappy games.
No doubt. I mean, I'm just saying, like, as someone who's played all of those games, I mean, I just preferred the story and the systems in 8. But 7 is where a lot of people were introduced to this franchise. It sort of bred a brand new generation of RPG players. You know, people who didn't play a lot of SNES stuff, or people who were just introduced to... I mean, this was a game that legitimately can only have been done on one platform at the time. And it was so iconic because of what it represented, the direction of games in general. And that's why I think it's a phenomenon and it's a cultural icon. And it had like things like, I feel like spoiler warnings didn't exist before this game. You know, it's things like that were bred out of this amazing story and experience from this exact game. But like, if you look at the systems, it's a lot more, it's a simpler game than some of the later stuff, but it's a great game. I mean, let's not go. It's going to make $1 million. I threw my wallet at my monitor. Nothing happened. I'm upset. Like, I want the game to just come right at me now.
I just don't understand. You say it bred a generation of gamers, but yeah, that like two generations ago of gamers. I just, this and Shenmue, there were people around me inside the theater that were going bananas. And yeah. I know by looking at them, they were babies when these games were out. Like, I'm curious how many people were cheering because of the reputation of these games rather than because they actually have any genuine feels, but whatever.
I think part of it is it's dreams can come true, right? Like, whether or not you like Shenmue 1 or 2, or you even know or have played Final Fantasy 7, which still plays the same, you know, you can find a PS1 version of that game and play it just fine. The gameplay is still there. It's compelling. The mechanics are still compelling. Like Zev said, it's not the most complex, but what the Sony press conference did is that it told all of us that Santa Claus is real. It and fired that.
Well, more that he's listening.
That's what I mean.
Like, they hear us. They hear me. They know what I want.
Exactly what I mean. Like, he's real. He's out there. He knows if you've been good or bad. He's going to give you what you want. And that's what made it such an amazing press conference. Whether or not these games will be good, you know, I'm so glad that Shenmue 3 is funded so that I don't have to put any money up and I can wait for it to come out and get mediocre reviews and then play it for 10 minutes when it's free on PS Plus. But like, in terms of press conferences, if Sony's press conference didn't get you excited and tingly at the state of like gaming and where we are in fan service, you're lying or you're dead inside. Like, they did everything right from a spectacle, not from a games I'm playing this year.
I mean, yeah, E3, that's what E3 does, though, right? It picks up on things that you love because they need those pops. Like, they need those audience pops. You're not going to be like, oh, this is a brand new franchise that I know nothing about. Let me cheer about it for 20 minutes. Like, they need that logo to come up and have people flip out. So we're having this conversation right now. Like, Shenmue 3, I don't care about it at all because I played Shenmue 1 and 2. And they were okay. Like, I feel like that was where nostalgia. Games. I mean, I never did, but like, I feel like that's where nostalgia picks up a lot with that series. So it'll, you know, and also, side note, we're not at Shenmue, but like, it's kind of gross that Sony was like, hey, this is a Kickstarter you should go support. Like,
I don't know.
Kickstarter. If that's, I have a weird relationship with that.
I part of me agrees that that's super gross, but I also think it's super gross that Microsoft is bringing early access to consoles and that early access exists in Steam. We're in this weird world now where fans have been clamoring for Shenmue 3, but clearly it seems developers or publishers, I'm sorry, were passing on the game, or, you know, it's this fine line of, I really enjoyed the Veronica Mars movie, but that movie could have never been a studio movie they need to see that there's fan interest and enough people putting their money where their mouth is to make this thing. And the word on the street is now that Sony is coming along and helping, because I think the first Shenmue was a $50 million game years and years and mm-hmm. years ago. Like, there's no way they're making mm-hmm. Shenmue 3 for $2 million unless it exists on a HD cassette somewhere and they're just releasing it.
Well, and Sony today came out and said that they're going to be financially supporting the development of that game anyway. So if Sony's already backing it, why then do they need to go out and say like, hey, this is on Kickstarter right now? Because what's Sony going to like,
but how is that
pie in the sky, this happens. I mean, but no, I guess, pie in the sky, this happens. This is my question. Let's say it didn't get funded. Sony put it on their stage. Now Sony's going to say like, oh, it didn't get funded, we're not going to give you any of that money. Like, that game has to exist regardless. So what Sony putting on their stage says is, we want to excite you about the possibility of this. We're going to invest in it, but we want you to go out and spend all of your money on the promise of a franchise that hasn't been around for how long now? Since the 90s?
That's on gamers and consumers. And Jeff, I think, you know, I'm curious to get your take on this. We've gone both ways on Kickstarter, but the thing existing, does the fact that drugs exist in the world ruin the world, or is it the people that are willing to use these drugs and abuse their bodies and ruin their families that, you know what I mean? Like, at what point is a person supporting the Kickstarter to blame, not the fact that Kickstarter exists? Like, Jeff, I mean, did this rub you the wrong way, or is it, this is gaming in 2015?
It didn't. I thought it was a watershed moment, the fact that they put a, you know, a publicly funded thing on stage at E3. And I'm curious if it didn't matter what they put on stage at E3 because they put it on stage at E3 would have gotten funded, or if it was this particular game. I know there obviously is a lot of nostalgia for Shenmue, you know, in the hearts of gamers. In the chat room, Honey Rider says, I hope they package Shenmue 1 and 2 with it so I can play them. I don't envy anybody that hasn't played Shenmue 1 and 2, not because they missed out on anything, but because they think they missed out on something. I mean, I loved those games. I played those games all the way through. I completed those games. I played them with my girlfriend at the time. It was like one of the first games I'd ever played with a girlfriend where she was like, oh my gosh, I'm as into this as you. It was a completely different kind of experience. But if those games came out today, they would be panned.
Did you guys break up because you never got a resolution to the story?
Yeah, that was what it was. She wanted to find out where sailors hang out, and then we couldn't.
I think it sets a bad precedent, because we know the vision of which, because they've talked about it for a long time about what Shenmue 3 was supposed to be, but asking for, we're going to make this game for $2 million. Like, there's obviously going to be other investors involved, right? So I just think I interviewed Jane Jensen not too long ago when Joystick was still around, and she talked about how it's impossible to make a game for money on Kickstarter, because if you ask for what you actually need, you'll never make it. And if you, so you have to undercut what you actually need to get funded. Right. And then you are in a really bad position where we don't have any money to do this. And it sort of throws the entire system for a loop, which is contrary to what it exists, the reason why it exists. So I'm being an old fogey about it. Like, this is just the way that it is. And I'm not going to like say like, I'm not ever going to play this game because of the Kickstarter. I just think it's a little, they played on nostalgia, and then they kind of then asked you to go flip the bill for them when they had this major reveal. It's like, yeah, we're going to put Shenmue on a console if you go out and spend your money on it right now, and it's not going to come out for a few years. It's just like, I mean, having watched a lot of Kickstarter projects, I've supported a lot of board game Kickstarters, things that just stopped existing over time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think at this point, a lot of these companies are using it to gauge interest. They're using it as a marketing tactic. They're using it as a way to drum up support for something that wouldn't normally have support. And I think, I don't know, I don't fault the Kickstarterization of the industry necessarily. I think
nor do I.
You have to be, I think you have to be smart with what you throw your money at. But these people are, I mean, it's very political, right? It's using money as free speech at this point. People are just saying, I'm donating my money to have my voice heard, that I want this. And I'm just so curious how many people that supported it even played one and two, because these are games I'm convinced would be the laughing stock of the internet if they were put out today. I mean, I loved The Order, and people ripped it and panned it for having QTEs. You know where QTEs came from, folks? Shenmue. Yeah. Shenmue mm-hmm. invented them. Yu Suzuki invented the QTE. People joke about the forklift simulator. I played that level a lot. You have to do a lot of forklifting. The combat system in Shenmue is not good. The dialogues is not well written. There's a lot of weird stuff taking care of this cat for some reason. There is so much tedium in Shenmue, and yet I love those games. I'm not saying that people's love is misappropriated. I think people's love is genuine. The nostalgia is genuine. I certainly have nostalgia for those games. But people that haven't played them, I think people that haven't played them have a warped idea of what those games were. They were revolutionary at the time. Shenmue is not revolutionary in today's gaming world. You know,
I've Kickstarted things, and I think Kickstarter as a platform for independent developers is an amazing thing. The issue that I have when doing it on E3 stage is at E3, we're supposed to go there and see what the promise of the future is. And this is the first time in the history of that stage show that the promise hinges on us opening our pocketbooks to make the promise they're giving, like making that promise to us. We have to pay for it now. So that promise that they're telling us on that stage actually comes true. And that's what I don't like about it.
Yeah.
I mean, Shenmue getting funding on Kickstarter is great. It's just it appearing on the stage show, getting people amped up, and then them saying like, it'll happen if you go and kickstart it. That's the problem where I'm like, guys, it's just like, it's a weird moment, but it'll happen again and I'll deal with it. I think we'll all live somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that in one conference you had the resurrection of Shenmue, a remake of Final Fantasy VII and Last Guardian all in the same conference. I think that's just like any one of those things would be quote unquote megaton. And the fact that all of them happened at once, I think is pretty, pretty amazing. It felt like being in that room with all those people and like gasps and shocks and no being said over and over, like it felt like anything was possible in those moments. It felt like there's this tidal wave of all of these things happening that couldn't all be happening that we never thought would happen. It was very special. And, that's why when I walked out of it, I felt like Sony did something remarkable. Yeah. It's to a very narrow audience. It's to a very, you know, they were preaching to a very specific choir, but if you're in that choir, like I am, it meant something. It felt like something. And that's a special thing.
I mean,
oh, wait, guys, Golden State Warriors just won the NBA championship.
Yes, they did.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm a huge Golden State Warriors fan. I have been since I was a little kid, and it's been since 78 that they've even been to the playoffs. So
how many Golden State NBA final championships would you trade for one Niner Super Bowl win?
All of them.
So wait, but I thought LeBron said he was the best in the world.
He needs some teammates, man. He needs some teammates. Anyway, go ahead.
So to your point of a Sony E3 press conference, I think they hands down, air quote, won E3 this year with their press conference. I think their press conference this year was one of the best press conferences of recent E3 memory. And what you're saying about them preaching to the choir is right, but it's too it's too small of a view of what it was, because they also had the Call of Duty DLC exclusivity moving over to them. They had Assassin's Creed. They had Star Wars. They had Uncharted 4. Like, yeah, all these games we haven't talked about. They had Street Fighter 5. They had the awesome, normal E3 bombastic AAA games pounding away at this thing, but they also had 3 mic drops. And what Sony did well again this year is they got the energy in the room into a place of fandom and super fandom that was infectious and contagious, even to people watching around the world, that if you're watching, you're at least somewhat interested in video games, more so than, you know, Joe Walmart or whatever, you know, person that just gets their Madden or their one game a year. And you have that energy, that electricity rippling through the room. Then when they start showing Star Wars Disney Infinity 3.0, you're already on the edge of your seat and you're like, yes, and everything is going and the hair is on the back of your neck and you're excited for Battlefront and this is amazing and what the crap, Shenmue 3. And then all of a sudden you're watching Nathan Drake just drive his car over, ruining the businesses of several small businessmen in this beautiful island location, and you're okay with it because it's everything that a spectacle, that a press conference should be. And saying that they were just preaching to the choir ignores the fact that all those other staples of an E3 press conference, of a modern E3 press conference, were also covered. They somehow recreated the magic of last year where they said, oh, our console's $1, Microsoft. How do you like them apples? And the fact that they did it 2 years in a row is incredible. And I think last year it showed that hype and buzz and positivity around a projected success of a console will take it a long way, because let's be honest, neither of these current gen consoles have truly delivered this next gen awesome experience, but they're selling like hotcakes, and PS4 leading the charge off this expectation and this goodwill that somehow humbled Sony continues to nurture. And it's incredible that they did it back to back.
Yeah. We're going way long, as I knew we would. So I do want to talk about some of the other conferences as well. I don't want to give short shrift to Sony. We have talked about them a lot. You brought up Uncharted 4. We do have to talk about that, because it melted my face in every possible way. I went to sleep last night, sitting in my hotel room, with my iPad in my lap, watching it over and over, the Uncharted trailer. But before I get to that, I do want to talk about, No Man's Sky, which is, you know, it's a massive game. It's associated with the PlayStation brand at this point. People are super excited about it. It seemed, you know, he seemed rushed. Sean Murray on stage seemed rushed. He's like, oh, you only have 3 minutes. I don't know. For the first time, and Christian, I know you've been saying this all along, but for the first time, I found myself worried about No Man's Sky.
Me too.
It was the first time I'd seen that game and said to myself, is there going to be context for this? Is there going to be any kind of reason for me to do this stuff? You know, I love sandbox games. I love open world. I love the scope and size of this game. I love science fiction. I love specifically the sort of 60s era science fiction that this is inspired by. But seeing just another example of how big and massive everything is without any kind of specificity and without any kind of context kind of made me worried. It's like, am I going to want to just like build a Wikipedia for you? Is that all I'm doing? Is this fish is marginally different than the other 15 million fish that people have uploaded before? Yeah, he showed giant laser combat area, but I think the Uncharted demo was a great example of how character and story and context and narrative is so fulfilling, because here's these characters we care about, we love, and they're constantly quipping and talking as we're going through this crazy action. It just felt hollow and empty in the No Man's Sky. Yes, it was only 3 minutes long. Am I wrong about this?
They need to stop showing it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's one of those games that the more the magic like behind the scenes is shown, the less people get interested in it. And not because the game doesn't look good or because it's not fascinating. It's because it is a whole bunch of how do you explain discovery to someone with it being contextualized in entertainment? It's just difficult to even do that. And they've always tried to do that. And it's just a huge grand vision of a thing that seems like every time they start talking about it, I don't see the game. I start seeing spreadsheets. You know what I mean? Like, we build this out of all these different variables, and this is what you see. The line that I think that was meant to excite that made me kind of not enjoy the game as much was, this is an entire universe of planets. Some of them may never even be discovered. That's not like, so what that tells me is that there's no direction for content. It's just a bunch of stuff to see, and you might not see all the stuff. Like, so it does need to sort of focus itself on something. And if that's discovery, that's great. But I want it to be like Minecraft, where I just kind of go into the world and I figure things out for myself. You know what Minecraft didn't do? They didn't have huge stage demos of explaining how it's just do whatever you want a couple of years in a row. It's like they need to stop showing it because the game looks really impressive. That team is really impressive. But the more they talk about it, I think the less interested people get.
What do you think, Christian?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think where No Man's Sky could find success is as a, what's the word? A second screen game isn't quite the right word, but like, let's say, you know, I'm sitting here playing Bloodborne and I get stressed out, and without needing to have it load at all, like it's on my other console and I just turn and fly around and I leave that going. You know what I mean? That's how you're hanging out with your friends. We're both playing Heroes of the Storm, but we also have No Man's Sky running somewhere, and then while you're waiting for your game to load, you go and find this fish in this beautiful world, and you send a place, you know, you share a picture of it or whatever, then I go want to go see it, then I go look at it. It's, you know, the way a lot of people played Destiny early on, where you just basically hang out with friends going, oh, neat, this thing. And it's just kind of Skype point game. And I think it could succeed there, but it is the type of game where, because it got so much attention and hype initially, that I feel like they're starting, Hello Games is starting to feel a little bit of that pressure, and Sony is starting to lean into them. I think they said, I don't know if it was a year ago now or 6 months ago, that they're looking at it as a first party game. And I think that some of that, we got to show it, this is going to be huge, takes the magic off of. I mean, imagine if we saw Braid a million times, and or Fez, and we kind of did see Fez too much. But, you know, like that type of game, just let me play it and then discover that the QR code does this, and that when I beat Fez, I've yet to start Fez, and that's what's awesome about it. I feel like when this game comes out, it's because people, like you said, have pulled back that Wizard of Oz curtain. It's just going to be, I found this, and then it's kind of like, it's done. But I hope I'm wrong. I'd love for that game to be the best thing I've ever played.
The chat was pointing out earlier also that No Man's Sky is, they announced at the PC gaming conference that it will come out day and date on PC and PS4.
That's good.
So
just no day. So that's at least good for.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, that
we
PC
have to discover that too.
That PC at PC conference. Oh, don't get me started. okay, guys. I mean, we should really move on. But I mean, Uncharted 4. That was one of the most incredible demos I've ever seen, ever. And it started with a massive error, and yet it completely still won me over and melted my face.
I like to think that they showed off the awkwardness engine first, and then they showed off the rest of the game.
If I didn't know better, I would think they did that on purpose just to show you that it wasn't pre-rendered, you know, like, because it just looks so incredible.
That's for sure not the case, but it looks fantastic. But it's interesting to see where that game's going. I mean, the story seems to change every time they show a trailer. Like now Nathan is really young, and Sully's young. Mm-hmm. It'll be weird. It'll be interesting to see, because this is the first game without Amy Hennig.
Yeah.
Also, this is a Neil Druckmann joint now. So I wonder how those characters will interact, and if we'll see a big difference in the way that they... I think the actors will bring a lot to it because they've played those roles for a while. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's pretty interesting.
It just feels so great when you're, you know, that big action sequence is happening and they're making those quips and they're relating to each other in such a human way and everything feels so real. I mean, if that exact scene, even shot in that exact way, just with a camera behind it the whole time, was in a movie, I think it would still be just as thrilling as what I watched. I just was so blown away by it. I'm sure you agree, Christian.
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. Also, though, Zav, I think to alleviate your fears, is Neil was the game designer and co-writer of Uncharted 1 and Uncharted 2. He was not as involved in Uncharted
3. Well, he's not new.
3, which
and I he did Last of Us.
Right. So I think he's arguably involved in the best Uncharteds yet and not the worst. Mm. So I think this game will be in good hands. I think it might have a little darker tone. I can't bring up Uncharted, though, without mentioning that the Nathan Drake Collection is still the stupidest name for the remaster of Uncharted 1 through 3, without also mentioning that I'm going to buy that stupid named game.
People in chat are saying that I'm totally wrong and that they were older. They look younger than the trailer where Nathan Drake was super gray, but that was pre-rendered, so maybe that's why it didn't look... They looked younger in the actual gameplay footage. But, I mean, it's not like they haven't played with time in that series before, so it could be. Either way.
True.
Okay, guys, Nintendo. I think we're all going to probably voice some disappointment with what Nintendo showed. You know, they don't do press conferences anymore. They do these directs as they have, I think, what, 2 years now? And, you know, Star Fox, we got Star Fox right away was the first thing they showed. But let's just kind of talk about Nintendo in general. It felt like there was a lot of emphasis on 3DS games. And my take, I tweeted this, but my take was it seemed like from what they showed, I don't want to be cynical about it, but it really felt like what are the games we can get out there into the pipeline fast because we don't have much. Star Fox does look pretty cool. But what is your take on Nintendo, Zev?
Well, they tried to do a barrel roll into my heart and ended up crashing and burning. I mean, I like Star Fox, so that's pretty rad for me. I'm totally into that. I was waiting for Metroid, and they finally said Metroid, and then they gave us some horrible like weird knockoff that I'd find in a Chinese farmer's market. you know what I mean? On the Nintendo 65. Like, I'm like, what am I even looking at?
Yeah.
I was just like, no, I'm not on board with it. But I mean, I don't know. It's Star Fox for me was the big thing. I'm going to go with Star Fox. I mean, that was their conferences are so weird to gauge now because they aren't live. It's a pre-recorded thing. They have a lot of announcements that happen like in Treehouse events later.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
It did seem like a lot of their announcements were ... disappointing. You know, it was like Metroid Prime Remake on 3DS, Animal Crossing board game version on Wii U, Mario Tennis coming to Wii U. You know, it's like, oh, it's all ... disappointing. I don't stop with the ... Like, stop where we all want you to stop instead of continuing on. I know you're going to rant, Christian, so fire it up.
Well, I can't. I mean, you saw my tweets. I can't repeat those. This is a clean show. This digital presentation by Nintendo was horrible. I think it was Miyamoto that, you know, tweeted that he saw people's distaste for it and said he promised they'd do better next year. I don't believe you because Nintendo's been saying that for 4 years. You should be embarrassed, Nintendo, by this. And I know I'm going to anger some people that live, breathe, die Nintendo. That being said, I think I've been banned from Nintendo press events because I'm part of them. I don't care. This was disgusting. It was horrible. It was pathetic. It would have been a horrible showing to happen in the middle of the year. To have it be your E3 digital announcement is a disgrace. The fact that this was pre-recorded and your transitions were as horrible and awkward as they were, go watch 30 Rock. Watch every episode of 30 Rock and see how beautifully and wonderfully edited that show is. And then watch the live versions of that show and see how hard it is to do good live theater. And then go watch Microsoft's press conference and realize how amazing job they did and how horrible of a job you did, Nintendo. You announced, go ahead.
Let me just say, to be fair, I think Nintendo is at this point embracing this kind of kitschy, goofy, awkward, badly produced thing. Like, it's almost their aesthetic choice at this point. If, you know, all of their stuff is like that. The Nintendo World Championships announcement was awkward and weird. And I think it's intentional.
I think that's people writing fan fiction that makes Prometheus good. I think it's people explaining the ending of Mass Effect and making that a game that had weight, Mass Effect 3. I think that they're stumbled into it. And I think it's kind of like the Wii being a success and them trying to claim credit for they knew what they did and they're going to improve upon it with the Wii U. I think Nintendo makes some of the best games ever created, and some of the games on the Wii U are incredible. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze is one of the best platformers of all time, and it needs to be held up as such, but because it's on such a crappy system, it gets overlooked. But even if you're trying to do weird, you know, watch some Mega 64 videos that do weird gaming so well.
I mean, didn't they hire those guys several times?
And those are some of the best things that they've done, that Nintendo's done. But pacing aside,
I think Nintendo is trying to mask their lack of direction with quirkiness. You know what I mean? Like, we need to be cute because we don't have really much to say. I like Star Fox, but that's something, you know, that does that make an entire E3 press conference? No. I mean, and what do they show? They don't have any support for their platform. The Wii U is I don't want to say it's a lost cause, but because they released some really good games on them, but they're the ones that released those really good games. Mm-hmm. And no one else is releasing anything of quality on that platform, because when they try, it never sells. What are you going to do at this point with that platform?
Well, even so, the Star Fox reveal is a thing that made me think, reinforced my opinion that Nintendo doesn't know what they're doing. And then when they do things great, it's almost blind luck, because the Star Fox reveal and the gameplay reveal in and of itself should have been enough. And that was cool. And that should get people excited. And then they have that developer insight thing in the things. Was that Miyamoto that was talking? I forget, because I blocked it out of my memory like a bad dream. He's sitting there saying, now that we have two sticks, we can do really cool things like give Barrel Roll its own button. Shut the F up. What did you just... The things he was saying, explaining what makes this game cool, and now you can fly. This is crazy. Like, just the dumbest things that's like you, that really got you excited? Or do you just have 20 minutes you need to fill while you got B-roll? I got that B-roll. Walking around this beautiful temple. It was so dumb. And
there was this moment where Miyamoto was talking about how now you hit the A button and you turn into a walker.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's cool. And then he literally says, yeah, this was something that was in Star Fox 2, but that game never came out. So now you can do it. It's like, okay. I mean, like, are you leveraging the game that never came out for features on this particular, like, I don't know.
When you it's fly, just like, you lift back on the stick and now you can inverse controls. Like, now you can do waggle to... Oh, my God.
When Apple does it, everybody loves it. Apple's like, now you can have
multiple... What, Apple's doing something new?
Now you can have multiple windows on one device. It's like, but that's called a computer in 1992.
So, you know? to be Apple Defense Force, the difference is that Apple became the market leader in the device that everyone uses because of how tightly integrated everything else is. And so when they finally add a feature to the thing that everyone has anyway, you love it. It's like the new Xbox One Dash apparently is getting rave reviews because you have this console anyway, and now they're making the Dash more usable. That's totally different than being Android or being the underdog, the Nintendo, and saying, now we have shoulder buttons, which is basically what they were saying. And Yoshi Woolly World looks really darn cute, and I kind of love it. But I just want to be done talking about Nintendo, because what a piece of crap. What a piece of crap.
You know, I'm trying to be silver lining guy here, but I have to agree that I really was disappointed by a lot of what they showed. But chiefly with Star Fox, I was disappointed with how they seemed to completely not understand the two screen experience. You know, you created a console here that has its own big screen. And so what you do is you make me have to decide which of them I'm looking at to play your game. Like, that doesn't seem to make any sense to me. I feel like I could be playing just like I can with Kirby. I can turn off I play that game with the television off exclusively. I played it on the pad because it was a touchscreen experience on the pad, and I never looked at the television. So why am I wasting energy with the television on? I feel like that's going to be the same thing with Star Fox. There really is no reason. It's like you're playing a game on your pad and you're inviting an audience over, so you need to have this screen on in your living room. I don't understand that. I think if you're a 3DS owner, there's probably a lot of really cool, and I am one.
Ryu and Smash is great. Ryu and Smash is incredible.
Ryu and Smash, and there was a ton of games announced. There's a new Zelda coming out for 3DS that looks really, really fun. I'm sure it's going to be great. And they emphasized a lot
on their toys, though, like Amiibos.
Well, that's what's making money. Like,
the Skylight, exactly. I mean, like, but there's no software there that I'm getting excited about. Like, it says a lot when Mario Maker is the thing people are really excited about, because, like, hey, we love Mario. Let's just make our own stuff at this point, because what else are we going to play? Like, do I want to play Smash Tennis on Wii U? No. Mm. No. I want to play, you know what I want? I want a 2D Metroid game on 3DS. Or, you know, another continuation of that series. What I don't want to play is some lame-o robots in a four-player co-op game that has the Metroid logo slapped on it because they remembered this year that they own that franchise. I swear to God, Nintendo, I made this joke last time, I think I was on the show, when Smash was coming out. Nintendo forgets they own Metroid so much, they put Samus in their last game twice as two different characters. Mm-hmm. Her in the suit, her out of the suit. It's like, It's almost like they forgot that it's the same person. I know that they wanted to separate it that way, but it's just like literally like it's one of your best franchises that can go, that has actually evolved in ways your other franchises have not really done in a lot of time. And it's just like, it's ludicrous that this is what they're like, oh, this is good enough. Just put the name on it. We'll be fine. Like, it drives me crazy.
What I want from Nintendo is them to somebody there to wake up and go, hey, Let's stop mining the same five characters and franchises we have for the last 30 years, and let's create something new, and let's push this company forward. Instead of creating, you know, new properties and sticking our characters, our established characters in them, let's create new characters. Let's build this company forward. And yeah, you know, I still want a Zelda. I still want a Metroid. I still want a Mario, but that's all the company makes is those things now. A Donkey Kong, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Okay, let's stop that and move on to some of the third party stuff. We'll make this a potpourri because we shouldn't make this a 3-hour show. We got Bethesda, we had Ubisoft, we had EA, we had Square Enix, and we had the PC game conference that I won't even mention anymore because it was.
I figure
it was really
Bethesda
sad.
we'll probably spend the most time on. So maybe if you want to do that later, but.
Yeah.
EA had some really neat stuff. Star Wars Battlefront looks really great. People actually got to see the game in action.
I played it today. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Liked it a lot?
Well, you know, it's still Battlefield. It's still Battlefront. It's still a shooter, multiplayer shooter. It feels like it's, you know, it's got this incredible Star Wars skin on it. And man, is that Star Wars skin very beautiful and very mm-hmm. Star Wars-y. But, you know, it's not the game I really want. I want to be playing through story missions in those worlds, not just multiplayer missions. But if you're into Star Wars and you like multiplayer shooters, man, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, well, you have that iOS game to look forward to, whatever that was called. I don't remember what it was. And there's a new Old Republic expansion coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. It's like a playhouse for, it's sort of like Disney Infinity Star Wars on another level. And it's like, you just make this world come alive and play inside of these locations, which I think is really cool. But that looked, really cool. I'm Canadian, so I'm going to mention NHL 16. Mm. I hated 15 with a passion. Last year at E3, I talked about it on this show. And I was really surprised. Like, it looked amazing and they did a lot of great things. And then the game came out and had no features whatsoever. They pulled everything out of it because they forgot that, you know, how to make that game basically. And this year they already have the feature list out, which they've never done this early. And they brought back a lot of stuff they took out, which is thank goodness for hockey fans. Mirror's Edge, Catalyst seems like a neat thing. I know people really love Mirror's Edge. It was never one of my favorite games, but I think it's great that that franchise can exist still by the sheer will of the people, really, that mm-hmm. that franchise is being revived.
They could have just kickstarted it.
Yeah, why not? Try it. Just do it. I don't know. Other stuff that maybe looked great to other people at other conferences.
Unravel.
Unravel. Huh?
Yeah, Unravel. Wow. What I mean, the fact that that's coming from EA is pretty remarkable. But how charming was that guy? And you know, we have Woolly Yoshi, which looks awesome. But this is its own unique thing. It's a this wool character in a real world. It just looks so charming. I'm anxious to play that game. I think it looks great.
Yeah, I think that to me stole EA's press conference. Other stuff you kind of saw and were expecting. If we're just kind of, you know, dancing around Ubisoft, I think I tweeted, you know, the way Bethesda announced and officially revealed Fallout 4 is a million times better than the way Ubisoft announces and reveals anything. That being said, I loved Far Cry 3 and 4 and Blood Dragon. And I think Ubisoft has some really fun games in there. But the Division looks incredible still. I just, you know, I am never going to believe Ubisoft. I'm sorry. I won't. And then they did the thing that they always do is here's the game you're going to see at the next five E3s. Like, why did I need to see whatever that Tom Clancy? Just like, wait, just wait, just wait.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to mention.
Sorry. Doom. Oh, my God. I don't know what that was running on. Was that 8 Titans?
Doom looked awesome.
Was that
it looks awesome. It also looks super slow.
Really?
Like, I don't remember. I don't remember.
It fast.
No, I mean, every single time you kill someone with a chainsaw, you have to watch like a 5-second animation. Like, I mean, some of that stuff is,
I mean,
the gameplay movement speed is fast, but some of that stuff is just like, it's spectacle. And I don't know that that adds to gameplay.
It reminded me of Bulletstorm. Which
yes, I tweeted that
love.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it reminded me exactly. It was just like it looks awesome, and I'm gonna love blowing stuff up in that game. That's not the problem. I just think like they were talking about how like the thing that makes Doom important is its speed, and the game seemed slow to me. But I'm a Doom sucker, so I'll play that like crazy. So it doesn't really matter.
Boy, I'm surprised you said that. I thought it looked really fast and furious and arcadey and just a load of fun. It reminded me. It felt like that Bulletstorm sort of you're the maestro of death and just, you know, like playing with people and all those fun finishing moves they showed. And how insanely gorgeous it looked.
I like how it's going back to what it was. It wasn't like Doom 3 tried too much to make it like a Silent Hill game. You know what I mean? Or like Condemned Criminal Origins, that kind of style.
Right.
And this is more frantic action and, you know, it's just, I think it looks really good. I mean, I'm just talking about that one animation seemed like it takes a little too long. I'm not saying the game is slow. Like people are
I think that might be scaled back. I feel like that's a demo type thing. I hope they do. Maybe they can do a slider because I do think if that happens, I don't know how many different chainsaw animations there are, but after you see it once, it's, you know, kind of like the X-ray moves in Mortal Kombat, it loses its shine. But when they went down to hell in that game, I was just like, I'm playing this on easy. This is incredible. I can't play this on hard. This is
That's where I was like, this is classic Doom, like super twitch, like you're bouncing off of enemies and off walls and stuff like that. Like that's where I was like, this is what I'm looking at. I think that they were just trying to set the mood in that first demo, and I was just like, you know, those animations just take a little too long.
I just thought it was super cool. I thought it was super cool how you got all the weapons in that demo. Like every weapon was yanked from a dead corpse. I thought that was cool. And the fact that they went, you know what? We're not trying to make a modern game. We're not going to add crazy story or, you know, role playing elements. We're not going to have any concessions to modern gaming. We're just going to create this crazy, insane arcade shooter just like it used to be. And yeah, it's going to be old school and it's not going to be for everybody, but we're going balls out with this. I respect that.
But what rig do you think that was on? I mean, that looked face melting.
Yeah. Well, it's that new engine, you know.
I hope we get something like that on consoles, or I hope even like the 980 Ti can handle that. I don't know. It was like the blood that was going everywhere and the reflections and the light that was coming in and bouncing around when they were in hell. I mean, kudos to id Tech, or, you know, I don't even know what the company is anymore, who's there anymore, but creating some graphically stunning gameplay.
Another thing,
Ubisoft.
Sorry.
I was just going to just jump over to, but if you want to finish on Doom, that's.
No, I was going to jump over to Ubisoft as well. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, can Ubisoft stop making the crew happen? Because it didn't happen. So they need to stop trying to make it happen. Like, that game was not good. No one cares. I don't care about your DLC to add more content to that game. It's just like, I'm not down with it. But it's like, here's the thing, man. And I'm going to say it, and it just drives me crazy. The audacity of that company to have a trailer to reveal Syndicate, to talk about how badly they messed up Unity, to admit that they messed it up, and then they hype up Syndicate the exact same way that they hyped up Unity and every other Assassin's Creed game. Like, you do not deserve to be able to do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Do not talk about Assassin's Creed Syndicate like it's the next best thing you've ever done again, because you said the exact same language about Unity, and that game was a train wreck, okay? So it is frustrating as hell when I'm sitting there hoping that they'll do something interesting. And it's like, Ubisoft doesn't care about a franchise anymore unless they can turn it into an open world game. Like, unless it can make it a giant universe where they can just add more content to it later or sell some season passes, it does not seem like they give a hell about it. Like, what was Ghost Recon before? It was a really great tactical shooter. Now it's an open world Far Cry game. Like, Splinter Cell will never be made ever again, because how do you make that into an open world game? Like, they made racing games. That's an open world, like, all of the United States now. Mm. It's like every single game is the same at Ubisoft, and sometimes they nail it. Far Cry 4, amazing. Watch Dogs, horrific. Like, sometimes they do great, sometimes they don't. It's just, it's frustrating where they're like, here's the new Assassin's Creed game. We screwed up the last one, but this time we got your back. It's like, no. Like, why should I trust anything that's being said right now? Because the last time you did this, it was pure garbage. Hot liquid garbage was that game. I hated it so much.
And this is
I played Rogue way better. Rogue was way better than Unity.
And said by the guy who owns Watchdog Wii U. So, you know, you're a real fan. There's that.
That was for a review, and I sent that out to a reader right quick. Don't want that hot garbage in my apartment. Watch Dogs was garbage. I'm glad they didn't try to trot that back out. This Unity was trash. I mean, like, Syndicate, it's like, I don't know what they want it to be. They want it to be Madden. Like, it needs to be their annual franchise. It's like, I get it. It was popular, but like, at what point do people just say, like, enough is enough? Like, why should we believe a word you say when it comes to these games? It's terrible.
I don't know, Jeff, where you come down on this, but I feel like it's tough because you want to mention these big games, but they just, you know, continue to be disappointments. But then there are like cool games. You know, Dishonored was just a CG trailer, but called it. And then what was that game with the guy? I don't know what his game was, but I want him. The game, the dude with the beard and the cane, that was just like
For Honor.
Yeah, I don't care about his game. I want that dude, man. That dude. That dude won E3.
He brought it. Yeah,
and it got me excited about his game in a way that, you know, watching was it Jason Derulo or who was the dancer singer? That has, like, you know, there's a way to do things. I didn't need to see the Ford GT to get excited about Forza, but having that guy, assuming he's the real creative director of For Honor and not like the awesomest actor ever, like, really got me excited for what is maybe a Dynasty Warriors game. I don't know what the game is.
Yeah.
Dynasty Warriors with dueling somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say to Ubisoft's credit, you know, we talked about more female protagonists and sort of this diversity thing catching on a little bit. You know, there was this watershed moment where we had Aisha Tyler talking to Angela Bassett, and they were the only two people on stage, and they're talking about a video game shooter. Like, that's kind of amazing. Yeah. Like, that's never happened before. Two black women on stage alone, and they're talking about video games and a video game shooter. That's kind of a cool thing.
And that game is the only open world game that is the only game that wasn't open world, I think.
Yeah.
And that straight up is how Rainbow got its groove back. Like, Angela Bassett in that game, she's looks awesome. Hype. I'm super pumped for that game. That game looks like the tactical planning game that I remember, without having the little chart coming up and you have to actually sketch it all out. But like, I'm super excited to play that.
That game is not for me at all, but I appreciate it from afar. So, you know, we can wrap up. We've been going 2 hours strong now, and you know, I think the 5x5 folks just went to bed. I think they just texted me that they're going to bed. We can sign off whenever we want, but so we kind of have the run of the place. If there's anything else you guys want to talk about, I think overall the first half of this E3 it got me so excited for games. There's so much so much to be excited about. So many games. I mean, there's so many games that I've seen on the show floor that didn't even make it into any of the press conferences, because there's just wasn't room. There's just not room for the amount of awesome stuff there is. I mean, I think this year is strong. 2016 is going to be even stronger. I'm sure a lot of the stuff we see is going to be pushed to 2017, but what are your guys' sort of overall thoughts? I mean, Christian, you and I will be back on Monday to have a wrap up show. We'll do another big E3 show where we're talking about more stuff that we had hands on with. But Zav, what is your feeling about, here we are after all the press conferences. How do you feel about this E3?
I'm liking it. There's a lot of games we didn't bring up, like South Park and the Fractured Butthole.
Best title of a video game of all time.
That game looks, I really loved Stick of Truth, so I'm super happy about that. Dishonored 2, I love that they're going back into the story and Emily is now one of the protagonists in that game. Mm-hmm. All grown up and yeah. Now she's an assassin. That's pretty rad.
We didn't really talk about gameplay of it. I don't need no CG trailer, bro. I don't need no CG trailer.
To know it's out there.
The fact that, Bethesda, one of the things I didn't say that I should say is that Bethesda, first time ever doing a press conference, knocking it out of the park as far as pace and sort of meat and how things are put together and going from one thing to another and Todd Howard's great presentation. It all felt really good. And also the idea, something I've been harping on for a long time now on this show, which is show me games when they're closer to release. And they totally did that with Fallout 4. I give them lots of credit. And then Dishonored 2, like you didn't need to just give us a CG trailer. Like wait until you're ready. Anyway, go ahead.
I was waiting for Rogue Warrior. What was that game with Mickey Rourke that they released? Bethesda is actually like nailing things now.
Yeah.
When they were starting to publish things, it was a little rocky of a start. We didn't mention Fallout 4 at all, really, other than the DLC thing.
There's so much to that game. It actually frightened me.
It's Minecraft. It's an entire crafting system where you could build anything.
Yeah.
You can make your, like, horde mode is built, baked into that thing.
You know what I needed out of a 200-hour role-playing game? More shit to do.
You know what I wish I could do in Fallout is make buildings now. Like, what? No. Why do you hate my free time, you monsters? Leave me alone.
But I will say, the best thing about Fallout.
My poor wife.
Your poor wife, indeed. You're not going to have a wife after Fallout.
Exactly.
Fallout is your wife now, sir. the thing I always loved about the Fallout franchise is looting crap, is scavenging, is getting bits and pieces of gunk and junk and opening every single drawer and looking through every single abandoned waste basket and finding a little piece of crap that I then stick in my inventory and stress about how much weight I'm carrying. And now this game, it's like they doubled down on that obsession of mine and said every little bit of crap can be useful, so don't throw anything away. I think that's so great. It's like feeding that compulsion in such a fun, interesting, cool way.
Oh man, I hope that stuff doesn't weigh a lot, or else you're not going to be able to carry much of it as you're walking through the wasteland. I'm just so pumped for it. It just looks exactly like I want it. Like that's exactly what I was imagining. It's the same engine. It's just new lighting systems attached to it. So it's not like a completely overhauled thing. It's going to have that Bethesda jank, I'm sure, because they're making they're basically making everything they've created. This goes to illustrate something that a lot of people who support Kickstarters don't realize sometimes. It takes a long time to make a game. Todd Howard said they started conceptualizing this after Fallout 3.
Right.
But the game has been in development proper for 4 straight years.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a long time to make something this huge. So I'm super pumped for what they can do. I've interviewed Todd Howard before. I love listening to him talk about games and talk about what they do over there, because he's just like, he explodes with excitement and just starts swearing because he doesn't know how to contain himself. And like, that's what I like about developers who are off script and just get, you can see the glee in their eye about all the crazy stuff they're making. And like, did they need to make a crafting system or like The Sims in their game? No,
right.
But why not? And then they slipped a Pip-Boy on it, and now I'm married to it because they have that stupid collector's edition that everyone wants.
Is
that
the greatest collector's edition of all time? I think it's easy to say that. But
yes.
Does anybody know a price tag yet for that? Have that been revealed?
It's sold out.
Looking.
It's 100. Oh, God. Is it 150? 150?
It's the same price as an Elite controller.
It's $130 after tax, I think.
Wow.
It's not, it could have been more. I'm surprised it's not more money. I'm glad it's not more money.
So this is going to be our game of show, right, Jeff? I mean, it kind of has to be.
I mean, it certainly is I don't want to spoil anything, guys, but it certainly is a high contender, that's for sure.
Especially with it being this year. I mean, I think you and I might go back and forth on it. I think something like Halo 5 could have the chance of really grabbing me, but that being said, I'm always willing to bend to new, and while Warzone I think looks awesome, and I think Fable Legends could be a really fun game, everything that Fallout is doing and the fact that it's coming on the day that Tomb Raider franchise dies is incredible.
Yeah, I think Tomb Raider is another major contender for me for Game of Show. But yeah, I think the two highest contenders are like coming out on the same day.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, whereas at least Tomb Raider, I think you can play it on the show floor.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Fallout is not playable at all, which is weird for a game that's coming out in November.
Right. Yeah. Oh, guys, this has been an incredibly fun time. We have, again, another E3 episode coming on Monday. Zav, thank you for spending your evening with us. You were the first person I thought of for this, and I love talking games with you, man. So thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me spew my nonsense. I'm sure chat absolutely adored me,
dude,
crapping on all of the things that they love.
Oh, no. they love you, man, as do I. And why don't you tell people where they can keep up with you if they enjoy more of your said crapping?
I am on Twitter at XAV, a three-character Twitter handle. I got
lucky.
That's a
coup. That's a coup, baby.
It is. And I'll just say that you might be hearing from me soon with something.
Ooh,
in the next couple of weeks.
Well, you know where to go if you need to promote that thing. Come back and visit us, man. We'd love having you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. I love it.
Absolutely. Christian, what are you up to, man? What are things? What's your Twitter handle?
At Spicer. Long away, far away things. I'll be doing shows at the Seattle Comedy Underground over PAX weekend. I'll be doing shows in Austin around Labor Day. I'm bringing improv or stand-up there. It's the Out of Bounds Fest. I'll be doing stand-up. If you're in LA, I do regular shows at Nerd Melt called Sketch Melt Sketch Show. I do improv versus stand-up at UCB Franklin and Trifecta at UCB Sunset. And I have a comedy album out called Moment in Time. But you guys, E3.
E3, baby. E3. So we'll be back on Monday at our regularly scheduled time with our big wrap-up. We've just begun to cover the show, really. That was just tonight. This massively long extra special episode was just about the press conferences. But the real meat of the show started today and continues over the next 2 days. And I'll be having lots of hands-on with things, as will Christian. And we'll be back. I don't know who our guest is going to be next week, but we'll grab somebody good. And we'll be there to tell you all of our first-hand experience of all the games that we've just scratched the surface with. So be back here Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Excuse me. Oh, that's right. 11 a.m. Pacific time. Chat room, you guys have been awesome. Thank you for being with us tonight. I've been reading all your stuff this whole time. It's been rocking and rolling. It's been awesome having a different group of folks because of this different time frame. But we'll be back our regularly scheduled time. I'm going to bed, guys. Until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.